eyes over Cal, teeth still bared. And you don't. Thank you, I say stiffly, through gritted teeth. I quickly regret any kind feeling I ever had toward her. She revels in my sharp reply, and in the flush, spotting Cal's cheeks. Behind her, Ptolemus crosses his arms behind his back, puffing out his chest, displaying the daggers proudly. Farley notes each one, her eyes wide and angry.
A pity this meeting could not be held in the evening,
Ptolemus murmurs. His voice is deeper than Cal's, and infinitely less kind. He's brave to speak here, especially to Farley and me. I wonder if she sees Shade, as I do, speared by a blow from Ptolemus Samos. Even standing in his presence feels like a betrayal. Farley has more restraint than me. While I can only keep my mouth firmly shut, she tosses her head with a sneer.
So your sister could have more time to paint her face,
she snaps, gesturing to the intricate makeup sculpting of Angeline. The Samos princess shifts, if only a little, putting herself between her brother and us, protective to the last. I almost expect her to shoo him off and out of our reach.
So my father could attend,
she explains with a proud toss of her head.
King Volo will be here by sunset.
Cal narrows his eyes. He sees the threat as clearly as I do.
With reinforcements?
More Samos sworn to die for you?
Hardly, Evangeline sneers.
He's come to oversee the final push against Maven.
Oversee. Her storm gray eyes darken, if only for a moment, shadowed by meaning. It isn't hard to puzzle out the spaces between her words, what she means against what she says. He's coming to clean up our mess. I shiver. The Samos children are formidable, violent, and dangerous, but they are tools at the end of it all. Weapons wielded by an even more powerful man.
Good. Saves me the time of summoning him here,
Cal says, resting a hand on the hilt of his bejeweled sword. He grins easily, as if the prospect of Volo Samos were his own idea.
I'm sure you'll give him a happy welcome, Evangeline.
The look she throws at him could poison rivers.
Let's get this nonsense over with,
she snarls under her breath. Dawn streaks along the waves, bleeding from the horizon in shimmers of pink and paling blue. I keep my forehead braced against the cool glass of the drop jet window to watch our descent. As each second passes, my body tightens, my pulse a rising thrum, until I fear I might explode. It takes all my energy to keep my lightning at bay and the jet safe from my electric fits. Across from me, Farley stares at me, her hands ready at the buckles of her safety belts, to unfasten them and jump out the door if I happen to lose control. Cal has more faith. He puts on a show of casual disregard, one leg stretched out in front of him, with the left side of his body braced against my side. He radiates soothing warmth, and his fingers brush mine every few seconds, a firm reminder of his presence. If his grandmother is disgruntled or surprised by our closeness, she doesn't show it. She sits quietly with Julian, his face shadowed like never before. Davidson rounds out the rest of our jet, and thankfully, Evangeline and her brother are in the other craft, following along. I can see the reflection in the water, their small, whirring jet, a blurring shadow among the waves. Drop jets are loud, horrendously so, and for once, I'm glad for it. No one can talk right now, or scheme, or snipe. I try to lose myself in the constant hum. Province Island comes too soon, a circle of green edged in a pale ribbon of sand. From above, it seems like one of Julian's maps. Simply drawn, the village at the edge of the water, a small grid of a few streets. The harbor is empty, but almost a dozen warships anchor about a half mile from shore. Maven could shoot us out of the air if he wanted, I think, imagining the distant rumble of artillery fire. But we land without incident.
The turning, tightening sensation in my chest grows, moving far beyond my tolerance. I grate my teeth together, feeling as if my jaw might shatter from the force of it, and hop out of the jet as quickly as I can, if only to suck down the fresh air, and perhaps run right into the sea. Instead, I move away from the circling engines of the dropjet, one hand raised to keep my hair from the worst of the roaring wind. Farley follows, shoulders hunched. "You okay?" she says over the noise, so only I can hear. Mouth tight, I shake my head slightly. No. I search the tall grass covering the dunes of the beach, half expecting a contingent of sentinels to spring out and surround us, force our surrender, force me back into manacles. Bile rises in my throat, the taste almost making me retch. The sensation of silent stone against my skin returns with smirking vengeance. I can't go back there. I turn my face away, hiding in my whipping hair, trying to breathe and take the precious seconds I need to stabilize. Farley's hand clasps my shoulder, her grip firm but soft. "I'm not going to tell you to get over it," she whispers in my ear. "But you have to get through it, just for now." "Get through it." I grip my teeth and turn back to her, my eyes mercifully clear. "Just for now," I echo. "I'll fall apart later, after all this is done." Behind her, Cal hangs back, watchful but hesitant to interrupt. I hold his gaze over her shoulder and give him the slightest nod. "I can do this. I have to do this." We look strange, a contingent of silver royals, a red general, and two new bloods, all flanked by guards in our varying colors. While no one is willing to trust Maven to obey the rules of war, we know that the Lakelander Queen probably will. Still, I keep close to Farley and her two Scarlet Guard officers. I trust their guns and their loyalty. Evangeline and Ptolemus step down from their own jet, looking merely inconvenienced by the meeting, as if they have something more important to do. It's an act, of course. Evangeline wants to see Maven as much as I don't. She would never pass up the chance to sneer in his face. The dropjet engines rustle her hair as she stands, eyes sharp and keen on the grass around us. We agreed to meet at the interior of the island, a chance for the Lakelander nymphs to show good faith. It is a short but silent walk through the dunes toward a sparse forest of gnarled, stubborn trees. I'm reminded of Tuck, now abandoned to the waves. Shade is buried there, with no one to watch over him. Cal leads us, with Davidson at one shoulder and Farley at the other, to present a united front of our coalition. Red blood allied with silver. Evangeline and Ptolemus follow at his heels, surprisingly unbothered by their secondary position. I'm glad so many walk in front of me, giving me a few extra seconds to gather every ounce of bravery I can find. My best comfort is my lightning, webbing beneath my skin, known only to me. I imagine it behind my eyes, the forked blinding lines of purple and white. It isn't going away, and no one can take it from me. Not even him. I'll kill him if he tries. Months ago, I watched Maven make peace with the Lakelanders in a similar fashion. Even though the scenery was vastly different, the endless minefields of the Choke, instead of a grassy island between a brightening sky and a calm blue sea, it feels the same. We march toward the unknown, toward people of great and terrible power. At least now I won't be sitting on Maven's side of the table. I'm not his pet anymore. As in the meeting with the Lakelanders, a platform has been constructed in the middle of a field. Wooden planks smoothly fit together. There's a circle of chairs on it, half of them occupied. I almost vomit into the grass at my feet. The person closest to me touches my hand. Julian. I glance up at him, quietly begging. For what, I don't know. I can't turn around. I can't run away. I can't do anything my body is screaming at me to do. All he offers is a kind look and a nod of understanding. Get through it. Two sentinels plant themselves in our path, their faces inscrutable behind their masks. The sea breeze plays through their flaming robes.
"We request that you discard your weapons before approaching His Majesty, the King of Norta,"
one says, gesturing to Farley and her officers. None of them move. Farley doesn't even blink. Queen Annabel tosses her head back with a sneer. She peers around Cal, barely taller than his shoulder. "The King of Norta is standing right here, and he doesn't fear red weapons." At that, Farley laughs outright, her disdain directed at the sentinels. "Why do you care about our guns?" she crows. "These people are more dangerous than anything we might have." With one hand, she gestures around at us, the New Bloods and the Silvers, armed with abilities much more destructive than any guns. "Don't tell me your little king is afraid of a few reds with pistols." Next to her, the two Scarlet Guard officers shift a little, as if they can somehow distract from the automatic machine guns clasped in their hands. But Cal doesn't laugh, or even smile. He senses something amiss, and it chills me. "I assume," he says slowly, deliberately, "that we're going to enter a silent circle. Is that right, Sentinel Blonos?" My blood seems to freeze, and the air goes clean out of me. "No." Julian slowly puts an arm out, giving me something to grab. The sentinel flinches, reacting to Cal's use of his house name. I focus on him, if only to keep myself from spiraling out. It's no use. My heart rams a thundering beat, and air catches in my throat. A silent circle? I want to tear my skin off. My fingers twitch on Julian's arm as I tighten my grip past the point of comfort. The whites of my knuckles stand out sharply. He covers my hand with his own, trying to stem some of my fear. In front of us, Cal doesn't turn around, but he does angle his chin, eyes flashing, as if he wants to look at me, with pity, with frustration, or with understanding.
"That's correct," the sentinel replies, his voice muffled. "King Maven has provided silent stone to ensure the meeting is without any harsher disagreements."
A muscle twitches in Cal's cheek as he tightens his jaw.
"That isn't protocol," he grinds out.
The growl in him seems to ripple on the air, like the warning of a beast. Part of me wants him to snap and burn these two, burn the island, burn Maven and Iris and her mother, remove every obstacle in our way with a destructive, devouring fire. The sentinel straightens and fists both hands in his robes. He's taller than Cal, but nowhere near as imposing. His partner does the same, standing shoulder to shoulder to block our path.
"That is the king's wish. It is not a request, sir,"
he adds, sounding awkward and stilted. They used to protect Cal, as they protected his father and protect Maven now. I suppose confronting their former charge is one of the few things they aren't trained for. Cal looks back and forth, searching both Farley and Davidson. My teeth grit together, bone on bone, as I suck in tiny gasps of air through my nose. I can almost feel the silent stone again, threatening to drown me. Not if we refuse, if we turn around, or if Maven bows, allowing us to pass without suffering. Of course, he won't. Because that's why he brought the stone in the first place. Not to protect himself. The rules of war are protection enough, especially with his horribly noble brother leading one side. He did this to hurt us, to hurt me. He knows what kind of prison he trapped me in for 6 months of my life, how I spent every day wasting, dying so slowly, cut off from half of myself, trapped behind glass that would never break, no matter how hard I fought. My stomach sinks when Farley nods begrudgingly. At least she won't feel it. Silent Stone has no effect on her, or any other Reds without abilities. Davidson is decidedly less keen, his spine straight and shoulders tight, when he looks at Cal. But he nods with a jarring motion, agreeing to the terms.
Very well.
I barely hear Cal say it, as a roaring rises in my ears. The ground beneath me spins in a dizzying circle. Only my grip on Julian's arm keeps me steady. At the front of the line, Farley and her officers loudly discard their weapons, making a show of their guns and knives. I flinch as each one drops, useless, disappearing into the dune grass.
Come on, Julian whispers so only I can hear. As we move,
he forces me to take a step. My limbs tremble, threatening to give out, and I lean on him as surreptitiously as I can, letting him guide me forward.
Get through it.
I raise my eyes as best I can, trying not to shake or fall or run away. Iris stands out brightly, her armored gown a glowing radiant blue, like cornflower. It spreads around her, artfully draped over her seat. She is the perfect balance between warrior and queen, even in comparison to Evangeline. Her gray eyes track us as we approach, narrowed to predatory slits. She was never unkind to me, by silver standards. Still, I feel hatred for her and for what she's done. With the stone looming close, I have to fill myself with rage. It's the only thing to block out the fear. I step into the circle of silent stone, the unnatural sensation falling over me like a curtain. I bite my lip closed to keep from screaming. My gut turns again when the old aching weight lands hard on my shoulders. I falter in my step, my eyelids flickering, the only outward show of my intense pain. Inside, my body screams, every nerve alight. Instinct tells me to run, to leave this circle of torture. Sweat trickles down my spine as I force one footstep after another, trying to keep pace with everyone else. If not for the stone, I would explode in a burst of electric fury to set all my storms to shame. Lightning has no mercy, neither do I. I glare, eyes narrowed against the need to weep. I look at anyone but Maven. Iris's mother, Queen Senra, is more subdued, a smaller woman than her daughter, with the same coloring but a plain face. Like Iris's, her armored dress is a deep blue, banded with gold to match the crown on her own brow. They lean together, tucked close, in each other's confidence as only mother and daughter can be. I want to rip them apart. The fourth royal isn't someone I've seen before, but I can guess his identity easily enough. Prince Bracken towers in his chair, his skin the polished, flawless, blue-black of a precious gemstone. His robes are amethyst-edged purple, artfully draped across a breastplate of solid gold. His dark eyes rest not on Cal or me, but on Davidson. The prince looks as if he might turn the premier inside out, clearly craving revenge for his children. Along with Iris, he flanks Maven. I try not to look at him at first, but he is impossible to ignore, even though the sight of him sends hot knives along my skin, so sharp I expect to start bleeding. Get through it. Hold on to the anger. My heart stops when I glance to him and find him already staring, a familiar cursed smirk twisting on his pale lips. Maven bobs his head as we take our seats, his eyes sweeping between me and Cal, as if no one else exists. Premier Davidson sits between us, a firm divide. Maven seems to enjoy that immensely, grinning at the buffer between his brother and me. The sea breeze ruffles his hair, still longer than Cal's, and curling softly beneath the weight of his wretched black iron crown. I want to kill him. His uniform is familiar, raven black, hung with the usual ill-gotten medals of state. He smirks at Cal's jacket, noting the reversed colors with glee, probably happy to have chased his brother out of their symbols. He regards us with cool and open delight, eager to make this as painful as possible. The mask of the cruel king is firmly set in place. I must loosen it. Leaning toward Davidson, I put my elbow on the arm of my chair and jut my collarbone forward. The brand is clear for all to see, burned into my skin. M for Maven. M for monster. His gaze snags on the ruined flesh, faltering for a moment. Those ice eyes go blank and far away. It's like pushing him off a path or sending him down a long, dark hallway. He recovers, blinking at the rest of our coalition, but it's a good start. Our seating was arranged, so everyone falls in without incident. To my surprise and discomfort, Farley has Cal on one side and none other than Ptolemus on the other. I grimace. If she doesn't fly across the platform to strangle Maven, she might just kill one of her own allies instead. Farley's glare burns as much as any calor as she stares down the boy king. They've met before, long ago, in the Summer Palace, when Maven fooled us all with an easy lie, the one we all wanted to believe. He tricked her as much as he tricked me. It's truly fascinating to see how high you can rise, General Farley, Maven says, addressing her first. I know what he's trying to do. Put cracks in us before we barely even sat down. I wonder where you thought you would be now, if I were to ask you a year ago. What a journey. His eyes tick between Farley and Ptolemus, the implication clear. When I was his prisoner, he cracked my head open, looking through my memories with the help of a Mirandus cousin. He saw Shade die at Ptolemus's hands, and he knows what he meant to Farley, how much my brother left behind. It isn't difficult for him to poke and prod at that open wound. Farley bares her teeth, a predator even without her claws, but Cal answers before she can toss back acid. I think all of us find ourselves in strange places, he says, his voice stern and even, diplomatic to the bone. I can't imagine the effort it must require. It isn't often a Norton king sits next to Lakelander queens. Maven only sneers. He's far better at this than Cal will ever be. It isn't often firstborn sons sit anywhere but the throne. Eh, brother? He shoots back, and Cal shuts his mouth with an audible click. What do you think of all this, grandmother? Maven adds, glaring daggers at Annabelle. Your own flesh and blood, warring with each other. She responds with equal venom. You're no blood of mine, boy. You lost the right when you helped kill my son. Maven just clucks, as if pitying her. Cal raised that sword. Not me, he says, tipping his chin at the similar sword at Cal's hip. Such an imagination. Old women are so prone to their fancies. At his side, Queen Senra arches a single, smooth eyebrow. She says nothing, letting Maven spin his web, or knot his own noose. Well, he says, clapping his hands together, I did not request this meeting. I believe that means you present whatever terms you came to offer. Surrender, perhaps? Cal shakes his head. Yes, yours. Laughter from Maven is an odd sound, forced, the air pushed out, the sound calculated and formed, an imitation of what he thinks a laugh should sound like. It rankles his brother, and Cal shifts in his seat, uncomfortable. Bracken doesn't smile either. His lips tug into a scowl. He rests his chin on one bald fist. I don't know his ability, but I assume it is a powerful one, restrained only by the stone, slowly choking all of us. I did not come all this way at such haste to entertain nonsense, Tiberius Calor, the prince says. It isn't nonsense, Your Highness, Cal replies, with a shallow dip of his head, showing deference and respect. In his seat, Maven scoffs, low and deep. You see my allies here. He spreads his white hands wide. Both silver royals, with the might of their entire nation sworn to our cause. I hold the capital, the wealthiest lands of Norta. You don't hold the rift. Evangeline snaps, cutting him off. Despite the stone, her medals are all in place. They're truly made, locked into form,
not held together by her ability alone. She prepared for this, as I should have.
You don't hold Delphi. You lost Harbor Bay yesterday. You lose more until all you have left are the people sitting next to you with no way to repay what they give.
Her smile spreads, showing teeth capped with pointed silver. I think she would feast on his heart if she could.
You'll be a king without a crown or a throne before long, Maven. Best give up, while you still have something to bargain.
Maven raises his nose. It makes him look like a petulant child.
I will bargain for nothing.
Not even your own life? I mutter, my voice small but firm enough to carry. I keep still as he turns his eyes on me, letting the ice pour over my flesh. No flinching, no blinking. Get through it. He just laughs again.
Your bluff is entertaining, to say the least.
He chuckles.
I see what you have, who you've swayed to your side. State your terms, Cal, or go back to Harbor Bay and force us to kill you all.
Very well, Cal replies. His fist clenches. If not for the stone, he would probably burst into flame.
Step down, Maven. Step down and I'll let you live.
This is ridiculous, Maven sighs, rolling his eyes at Iris. She doesn't return the gesture. Cal forges on, undeterred.
The alliance with the Lakelands and Piedmont will stand. We'll have peace on our coast, from the frozen shores to the islands of the south. Time to rebuild, regrow what this war has destroyed, heal wounds and right wrongs that have plagued us for centuries.
You speak of red equality? Iris says. Her voice is as I remember it. Calm. Measured. She is a creature of self-control.
I do, Cal says steadily.
Bracken laughs deep and long, one hand pressed against the sculpted gold on his stomach. If not for the circumstance, I would think the sound comforting and warm. Senra and Iris remain quiet, unwilling to betray their intentions or thoughts so easily.
You're ambitious, I'll give you that,
Bracken says, pointing a finger at Cal.
And young and distracted.
His dark eyes dart to mine, making his point clear. I squirm under his gaze.
You don't know what you're asking us to do.
Farley isn't so easily cowed. She claws her hands on the arms of her chair, almost rising out of her seat. A flush tinges her cheeks.
Are you so threatened by the people you spit on that you can't allow them simple freedom?
She sneers, looking from Bracken to Senra and Iris.
Is that how tenuous your grip on power truly is?
The Queen of the Lakelands widens her eyes, the whites a livid contrast to the bronze of her skin and the dark brown of her irises. She looks truly surprised. I doubt a red has ever addressed her in such a way, and it shows.
How dare you speak to us, she blurts out.
Dear Julian is the quickest, evenly speaking over her before she can bait Farley into something more drastic.
History favors the underfoot and the oppressed, Your Majesty,
he says. He sounds enchanting and methodic, wise even beneath the weight of silent stone. The Queen is reluctant, but shuts her mouth slowly to listen.
The years are long, but eventually, always, fortunes shift. The people rise. Such is the way of things. Either let change come willingly, help it along, or face the wrath of such force. It might not be you or even your children, but the day will come when reds storm the gates of your castles, break your crowns, and slit the throats of your descendants as they beg for the mercy you will not show now.
His words echo long after he is done speaking, as if dancing on the wind. They have a sobering effect on the Lakelander queens and Bracken, who exchange uneasy glances. Maven is not subdued in the slightest. He leers at the Jaycoast lord, eyes alight. He has always despised Julian.
Did you rehearse that, Julian? I always wondered why you spent so much time alone in your library. It's too easy to throw the bar back in his face. I doubt anyone spends more time alone than you do, I say, again moving forward to display my brand. The combination makes him go pale, his mouth slightly open. Breath whistles between his exposed teeth. He looks like he wants to kiss me or rip my throat out. I doubt he knows which. Careful, Maven, I push on, pressing him closer to the edge of his tolerance. That mask of yours might slip. Cold fear flashes in his eyes. Then his face melts, brows creasing and lips pulling down, curling back to show more of his teeth. With the shadows under his eyes and beneath his cheekbones, he looks like a skull, white as moonlight. I could kill you, Red, he snarls, brazen in the empty threat. Funny, you had the chance for 6 long months. I pat my hands over my arms and chest, letting my fingers brush the brand. But here I am. I look away before he can say more, addressing the allies at his side. Maven Kalor is unstable, at best. As I speak, I'm intensely aware of their attention, the weight of 3 crowns staring me down, as well as the weight of Silent Stone, a constant squeezing pressure. I wish I could feel my lightning and draw a little strength from my ability. Instead, I have only my wasted self, and that must be enough. You all know it. Whatever the benefits of his rule, you know they don't outweigh the risks. He will be overthrown, either by us directly or by the crumbling of his country. Look around. How many high houses sit with him? Where are they? I gesture to the sentinels, their own guards, but no one else of Norta. Not House Well, or House of Sanos, or any other. I don't know where they are, but their absence speaks volumes. You are his shields. He's using you and your countries. He'll turn on you one day, when he has the strength to cast you both off. He has no loyalties and no love in his heart. The boy who calls himself king is a shell, empty, a danger to everyone and everything. In his seat, Maven examines his hands, adjusting the cuffs of his jacket. Anything to seem unaffected and unperturbed. It's a terrible act, especially for someone as talented as he is. I hold my head high. Why entertain this madness any longer? For what? To my left, Farley shifts, her chair creaking. She stares with all the fire the Kalors can't muster. Because they'd rather bleed themselves than be equal to any blood that isn't the right color, she hisses. Farley, Cal mutters. To my surprise, Evangeline takes on that mess, drawing attention to herself instead. She purses her lips and smooths her dress conspicuously. It's infinitely clear what's happening here. You say Maven's using them as shields? She says, almost cackling. Where are your armies, Queen Senra? And yours, Prince Bracken? Who really bleeds in this war? If anyone is a shield here, it's Maven. They're using the little boy against his big brother to play them off each other until they're confident they can destroy what's left. Isn't that it? They don't deny it, or don't want to give oxygen to such a claim. Iris tries another tactic, leaning forward toward the Samos princess with an easy, tight-lipped smile. I must assume the same of you, Evangeline. Or is Tiberius Kalor not a weapon of the Rift? Maven waves her back. He looks from Cal to Farley. She is the weak spot here, or at least he thinks she is. Good luck. No, not Cal, he says, purring. The Reds, the Montfort Mongrels, I know Volo and the other Silvers in open rebellion. They won't tolerate any kind of Red acceptance beyond what they need. Will you, Annabelle? He adds, tossing a grin at his grandmother. She merely turns away, refusing to so much as look at him. Despite all his posturing, Maven's smile falls a little. Farley doesn't rise to the bait this time,
She keeps still, and Davidson slowly claps his hands, inclining his head toward the false king.
"I have to applaud you, Maven," he says.
The blank calm of the premier is a welcome respite from so much bile.
"I admit, I didn't expect such deft manipulations from someone so young, but I assume that's how your mother built you, didn't she?" he adds, looking to me.
That incenses Maven more than anything. He knows that it means I've told them all I could about him, about what his mother did.
"Yes, he is what she made him," I murmur. It feels like twisting a knife in his gut. No matter who he was meant to be, that person is completely gone.
Cal's voice is soft in response, landing the final blow.
"And he is never coming back."
If not for the stone, Maven would burn. He slams a fist down, knuckles like exposed bone.
"This conversation is pointless," he snaps. "If you don't have real terms, then leave. Fortify your city, gather your dead, prepare for a true war."
His brother doesn't flinch. He has nothing else to fear from Maven. A transformation, a tragic one, has come over Cal. And he slides into the role he's best at. A general, a warrior, facing an opponent he can defeat. Not a brother he wants to save. There is no blood left between them, only the blood Maven made him spill.
"True war is here," he replies.
His calm manner sharply contrasts with Maven's sudden temper.
"The storm has broken, Maven, whether you want to admit it or not."
I try to do as Cal has done, try to let go. The false masquerade of the kind, forgotten boy is already gone. Not even his ghost remains. There is only the person in front of me, with his hatred and his obsession and his twisted love.
"Get through it,"
I hiss in my head. Maven is a monster. He branded me, imprisoned me, tortured me in the worst way. To keep me at his side, to feed whatever beast prowls around inside his skull. But as much as I try, I can't help but see some of myself reflected in him. Trapped by a storm, unable to break free, unable to walk away from what I've already done and will continue to do. This world is a storm I helped create. We all did, in ways big and small. With steps we could not fathom, paths we never thought to walk. John saw it all. I wonder which second put this in motion. Which choice? Was it Ilara, looking into my head for an opportunity to strike the Scarlet Guard? Was it Evangeline, making me fall into the arena of Queen's Trial? Was it Cal, his hand closing on mine when I was just a red thief? Or Killorn, his master dead, his fate decided, the doom of conscription looming before him? Maybe this didn't even start with any of us. It could be Farley's mother and sister, drowned by the Lakeland King, their deaths sparking her father, the Colonel, to action. Or Davidson, fleeing death in the legions, escaping to Montfort to build a new kind of future? Perhaps someone, even further away, 100 years ago, 1,000, someone cursed or chosen by a distant god, doomed and blessed to make this all real. I suppose I'll never know.
25. Evangeline. The silent stone grates against me, and my skin itches with a constant pressure. It isn't easy to ignore, even with my extensive years of training. I fight back the searing urge to rip my nails down my arms, if only to feel a different kind of pain instead of this foul, decaying weight. I wonder where the stones are buried. Beneath the meeting platform? Under our seats? They feel so close I could choke on them. Everyone else looks undisturbed by the unnatural sensation of our deepest parts repressed. Even Mare, despite her history. She keeps her head high, her body still. No sign of discomfort or pain. meaning I have to hide it as well as she does.
Ugh.
Bracken's lip curls in distaste, hating the feel of the silent stone as much as the rest of us. Perhaps it will make him more amenable to our cause. Yes, he despises Montfort, and he has reason to. But I think he hates losing more. And if Cal's blustering works, he certainly won't have faith in Maven much longer. Maven glares at Cal, as if he can somehow measure up to his warrior brother. Whatever compassion he counted on exploiting seems to disappear as Cal holds firm, unmoved in his seat.
"Those are my terms, Maven," he says,
sounding more kingly than his father ever did.
"Surrender and live."
Maven deserves little more than a bullet to the brain or a knife to the gut. He's a danger none of us can afford to leave breathing. His reply is guttural, coming from the deepest parts of him.
"Get off my island."
No one is surprised. Ptolemus lets loose a low breath. His fingers twitch, itching for the knives strapped across his chest. At least the sentinels didn't think or didn't care to disarm us. They must think Magnetron's defenseless without ability. They are wrong. My brother could put that knife into Maven's gut if the circumstances allowed. My betrothed leans forward in his seat, rising slowly.
"Very well," he says, pained. "Remember this day, Maven, when you are abandoned and alone, with no one to blame but yourself."
Maven has no response but a smirk and a chuff of laughter. He acts well, relying on the carefully crafted image of beleaguered boy called to greatness, the second son never meant to rule. It has no use here. All of us know who he is. Still in her seat, Queen Senra angles her face to him, leaning past her daughter.
"Our terms, Your Majesty."
He doesn't reply, too distracted by Cal and Mare to know she's even speaking. Iris nudges him.
"None but surrender," he says quickly. "No pardons, no quarter,"
he adds, eyes flying to Mare's face. She recoils under his attention.
"For any of you."
On Cal's far side, Annabelle stands. She wipes her hands as if ridding herself of this situation and her poisoned grandson.
"That settles it, I suppose," she sighs. "We are all in agreement."
Strangely, her eyes are on Iris, not on Maven or even Senra or Bracken, on the young queen with little to say and even less power in this circle. The young woman bows her head, gray eyes flashing with some meaning.
"Yes, we are," she says.
Next to her, Queen Senra does the same. A Lakelander tradition, probably, as silly and useless as their do-nothing gods. The two queens rise first on Maven's side of the platform, followed quickly by Bracken. He offers a low bow in my direction, and I incline my head. But his eyes darken as they sweep past me, fixing on Davidson. No amount of my posturing can distract him fully from his hatred of that new blood. It doesn't bother the Premier. He remains inscrutable, standing with smooth grace.
"This was interesting, to say the least," he mutters with an empty smile.
"Indeed," I hear myself answer. The rest of us rustle out of our chairs in a swirl of bright color and gleaming armor, until only Maven remains, firmly planted in his seat, staring. Mare artfully avoids his gaze, weaving around Farley to take Cal's arm. The sight enrages the false king, who fumes. I almost expect smoke to rise off him. If not for the silent stone, it very well might.
"Until we meet again," Cal says over his shoulder.
Something about the words sets Maven off, and he slams his hands down on the arms of his chair before storming away, turning on us all. His cloak, ink black, streams out behind him. I'm reminded of a toddler kicking up a tantrum, a very dangerous toddler. The Lakelander queens and the Piedmont prince follow him almost reluctantly. Cal's right. They'll abandon Maven's cause if the scales tip against him, if it becomes clear he can't win the war. But will they shift to our side? I don't think so. They'll sit back and wait to strike. I find myself almost envying the Scarlet Guard and Montfort. Their alliance, at least, seems rooted in true loyalty and a common goal. Not like us Silvers. We might speak of peace, but peace isn't what we're built for. We fight always, in throne rooms or battlefields or even across the table of a family dinner. It's what we are cursed to do. I'm eager to get out of the circle of silent stone and breathe free air again. With a tug, I pull Ptolemus along with me, toward the winding path back to our drop jets. I'm careful to keep him close with General Farley so nearby, haunting his steps. A rat stalking a wolf, waiting for the sliver of opportunity. As we get free of the silent stone, the cool relief of my ability comes rushing back. The pieces of metal in my jewelry, my hair, my teeth, tucked away all over my body, tingle against my perception. I reach for the medals on Maven, feeling them as they fade away. He's truly leaving, escaping the island as we are. The war is far from won, and if my guesses are correct, both sides are evenly matched at present, perfectly balanced. This could drag on for years, leaving me unwed, a princess only, still free of a queen's leash. I could go home for a few weeks, leave when Father gets here, let him handle the chaos, maybe steal away with Elaine to some quiet place. The thought curls my toes. It almost distracts me from the water seeping up beneath my feet, bleeding through the shallow soil. At the edge of my perception, Maven's medals stop moving. "Tolly," I whisper, reaching out to grab his arm. His eyes widen as he looks over the flooding ground. So does the rest of our party, lifting their feet, sloshing toward each other. Farley and her officers quickly reclaim their discarded guns, some of them now dripping wet. They react quickly, taking defensive positions, training their sights on the tree line and the platform in the distance. Mare shifts, putting herself in front of Cal. He looks around, terrified, momentarily stunned by the water slowly rising around us. One of her hands sparks. "Careful!" I bark, jumping backward, dragging Tolly along with me onto drier ground. "You'll fry us all." She regards me coldly. "Only if I want to." "The nymphs?" Farley growls, gun against her cheek, one eye pressed to the sight. "I see movement from their direction. Their blue dresses. The sentinels." She trails off. I draw a knife from Tolly's sash, letting it spin in my hand. And it's nothing to trouble ourselves with," Annabelle says, her voice light and dismissive. "Come, let's return to our jets." I'm not the only one who stares at her, jaw gaping open. Farley speaks first, still in position. "Either this entire island is sinking, or we're about to face an attack." "Nonsense," Annabelle sniffs. "It's nothing of the sort."
"Then what is it?" Cal grits out. "What have you done?"
Somehow Annabelle gives way to Julian Jacos. The older man offers a thin, empty smile.
"We've ended it," he says simply.
Mare finds her voice first. "What?" Something that sounds like a crashing wave echoes beyond the trees, in the opposite direction from the beach. On her knees, Farley jumps, double-checking her sights while her officers recoil. I find myself climbing the sandy hill, desperate to get to higher ground and a better vantage point. As I move, gunfire peppers the air, loud across the grassy field. Below me, Mayor flinches. I clench a fist, counting the bullets as they dance on the edge of sensation. They rocket in opposite directions, one volley to answer another. "They're fighting something," I report. On the ground, Cal sloshes forward, kicking up the water as his fists ignite.
Maven, I think he snarls, low and under his breath. Mayor stays in front of him, trying to hold him back without shocking him or being burned. His grandmother doesn't move at all. As I climb, the water ebbs like a small tide, receding and flowing in as someone pulls it. From my spot, I can see color through the knobbled trees. Blue armor, red flame, the fiery robes of sentinel guards. Someone screams, the sound echoing in a howl. The air turns to mist, as if someone is drawing a gray curtain across the world. Quickly, my jewelry spreads, forming armor along my hands and wrists, skittering up to my shoulders. "Give me a gun, Farley," I bark. She doesn't look at me, spitting on the ground instead. "I have better aim and better range," I snarl. Her grip tightens on her long gun. "If you think I'm giving you anything, if you think I'm asking," I snap back, flicking my fingers. Her weapon jumps out of her hands, soaring up to mine. "Really, ladies, there's no need for that," Annabel says, still oddly unaffected. "See now, it's over." She steps between us and points with a wrinkled finger, indicating the tree line. The water rushes across the field again, moving with the figures that are approaching in the distance, barely shadows in the mist. The corpses come first, floating along in the ankle-deep water, their sentinel robes splayed wide and wet. Their masks are gone, or broken, showing the faces beneath. Some I know, some I don't. The shadowy figures solidify, and one raises a hand, waving the mist away. It condenses and drops, passing over us like a sudden rainstorm, revealing Senra and Iris, their own guards fanned out behind them. Bracken follows, his chest flashing gold while his purple cape drags in the water. They position themselves strangely, obstructing the blue uniformed guards from view for as long as possible. Then they halt, 10 yards away, the risen waters gathered around their feet. We stare, perplexed, puzzled at the sight before us. Even the premier, his brow furrowed. Only Annabel and Julian remain unaffected. "Be a dear and prepare the trade," Annabel murmurs, turning over her shoulder to address the Jaco's uncle. He looks oddly pale, as if sick, but nods to her request and turns away, taking 2 Laralan guards with him. "Trade," she said. I glance at Mare. She feels my gaze and turns, eyes wide in fear as well as confusion. "Trade for what?" I want to ask. "Or who?" Something struggles in the circle of Lakelander guards, restrained. I see him through the gap between Senra and Iris, fighting a losing battle against men much stronger than he is. Maven bleeds from the lip, his crown askew on his mop of must-black hair. He kicks fruitlessly, forcing the Lakelander guards to drag him by the arms. Water coils the length of his body, ready to strike. Next to him, Iris whistles, spinning his bracelets between her hands. The flame makers, key to his ability, I realize with a swoop of shock. He's defenseless, at the mercy of those he would never show mercy to. The Lakelander princess grins sharply, a chilling sight in an otherwise measured persona. He spits at her, missing wide.
"Nymph, bitch," he snarls, kicking again. "You've made a mistake today."
Senra's lip curls in a scowl, but she lets her daughter handle herself. "Have I?" Iris replies, unperturbed. Slowly, she pulls the crown from his head and casts it into the water. "Or have you? Many, many mistakes, not the least of which was letting me into your kingdom." I can't believe my eyes. Maven, the betrayer, betrayed. The trickster tricked. The war, over. I might be sick. My breathing turns shallow, and I wrench my eyes away from Maven to watch his brother. Cal has gone deathly pale.
It's clear he didn't know anything about this, whatever Annabelle and Julian did, whatever trade they're about to make in his name. Who will they give over in return? I need to run, grab Tali, charge right into the sea. Quickly, I clamber back down the hill to stand by my brother. The false king should be distraction enough. Don't make it easy for the nymphs. Get to the jet. Get home.
Oh, don't flatter yourself, Evangeline, Maven crows, contorting himself so he can smooth back his hair. It keeps falling back into his eyes. You're not worth me, no matter how highly you think of yourself.
At his call, the others turn to look at me as I edge away, Ptolemus tight in my grip. I search for a single friendly face and find that Mare Barrow comes closest. Her eyes dart between me and my hand on Tali's arm. Something like pity wells up in her, and I want to cut it out with a knife. Then who? I lift my chin, relying on pride as armor. You trading yourself again, Barrow? She blinks, her pity melting into fury. I prefer it. No, Julian says, returning with the guards. Like the Lakelanders, they're dragging a prisoner from their jet. The last time I saw Solon Eral, he was stripped of his titles, nearly choked to death at my father's hand for his foolishness and pride. He killed the Lakelander king outside the walls of Corvium, against orders, for nothing more than a pat on the head. He was too short-sighted to see that that would only strengthen the Lakelander alliance with Maven and the resolve of both their queens. Now he'll pay for that mistake with his life. Solon hangs loose, his eyes oddly empty. He stares at his feet, and despite the weak grip from either guard, he doesn't try to run. With Julian Jaco standing close, I can see why. I doubt he's been given permission to run.
What is this? I didn't authorize any...
Cal sputters, looming over his grandmother. Gently, she puts a hand to his chest, pushing her king backward.
But you'll do it, won't you, Cal? She says sweetly.
With only the tenderness a mother can give, she reaches up to cup his face.
We can end this war today, right now. This is the cost. One life instead of thousands.
It isn't a difficult choice to make.
That's right, Cal. You're doing this to save lives, aren't you?
Maven says, his voice dripping with sarcasm. Words are the only weapon he has left.
Noble to the last.
Slowly, Cal raises his eyes to stare at his brother. Even Maven falls silent, letting the moment stretch and burn. Neither blinks, neither falters. The younger Kalor continues to sneer, daring his brother to react. Cal's face never changes, and he doesn't say a word, but he speaks volumes as he tips his shoulder, stepping out of his grandmother's path. Julian puts a finger to Solon's face, lifting his head so their eyes meet.
Walk to the queens, he says,
and I hear the melodious ability of a talented singer, the kind who could bewitch us all if he wanted, and sing his way to a throne. Luckily for all of us, Julian Jaco's has no interest in power. Despite his haze, Solon Eral is a silk, and his footsteps are graceful. He crosses the meager distance between our party and Maven. The Lakelander queens look like women starved, watching a meal approach. Iris grabs Solon by the neck, kicks the backs of his legs, and forces him to kneel in the water, hands submerged.
Send him across, Senra says quietly, waving a hand toward Maven. All of this seems wrong, as if filtered through smoked glass, too slow to be real. But it is. The Lakelander guards shove Maven ahead, making him stumble toward his brother. He still grins, spitting blood, but tears gleam in his eyes. He's losing control, and the tight grip he keeps on himself is coming undone. He knows this is the end. Maven Kalor has lost. The guards keep shoving, never letting him catch his balance. It's a pitiful sight. He starts whispering to himself, harried words between peals of sharp laughter.
"I did as you said," he mutters to no one. "I did as you said."
Before he can fall at his brother's feet, Annabelle steps forward, planting herself firmly between the pair of them, protective as a tiger.
"Not a step closer to the true king," she growls.
The woman is smart not to trust him, even now with nothing left. Maven sinks to a knee and runs a hand through his hair, mussing the dark, wet curls. He glares at his brother with all the fire he can no longer possess.
"Afraid of a boy, Kel? I thought you were the warrior."
At Kel's side, Mare tenses, putting a hand to his arm. To stop him, or push him on, I don't know. His throat bobs as he swallows, deciding what to do. With aching slowness, the last king standing puts a hand on the hilt of his sword.
"You'd kill me if our places were exchanged."
Breath whistles between Maven's teeth. He hesitates just long enough, leaving space for a lie. Or the hope of a lie. There is no predicting the mind of Maven Kalor, or what face he allows anyone to see.
"Yes, I would," he mutters.
He spits blood once more.
"Are you proud?"
Kel doesn't reply. The ice blue eyes shift, jumping to the girl at his brother's side. Mare hardens under his gaze, firm as tempered steel. She has every reason to fear him, but hides it all.
"Are you happy?"
Maven asks, almost a whisper. I'm not sure who the question is for. Neither says a word. A gurgling sound draws my attention, and I look up from Maven to see the queens circling their prey. They move in a kind of circle, not a dance, not a ritual. There is no pattern to it, only cold, collected rage. Even Bracken looks unsettled by them. He takes a few steps back, allowing them room to do what they must. Still on his knees, Solon sways between them, his mouth foaming with seawater. They take turns pouring water over his face with tortuous efficiency, just enough to keep him breathing. Little by little, drop by drop, his face pales, then purples, then blackens. And he falls, twitching, drowning in half a foot of water, unable to sit up, unable to save himself. They bend over his body, putting their hands to his shoulders, making sure they are the last thing he sees as he dies. I've seen torture before, from people who delight in it. It always unsettles. But this brutality is too measured for me to understand. It terrifies me. Iris catches me watching, and I look away, unable to stand it. She was certainly right. Maven made a mistake letting her into his kingdom and his palace.
"Are you happy?"
Maven asks again, more desperate and ferocious, his teeth like white fangs.
"Be silent, Maven," Julian sings, forcing the boy to look at him.
For the first time in his twisted life, Maven Kalor shuts his weasel mouth. I look over my shoulder, only to find Ptolemus as white-faced as I feel. The world has shifted beneath our feet, alliances broken and remade, leaving borders to be redrawn, betrothals to be carried out. And I realize with a sinking sensation, one more piece of the bargain. There must be. I lean into my brother, whispering so only he can hear. "This can't just be for Solon." Eral is a disgraced lord without title or land or any kind of power, in either the Rift or Norda. He isn't worth anything beyond what he did. And even the Lakelander queens wouldn't trade Maven to feed their vengeance. They're strange, not stupid. Annabelle said this was the price, but that can't be true. There must be more. Someone else. I keep my face blank as the realization churns through me. No one can see behind my mask of stillness. I wasn't far off the mark, when I feared we were the trade. But Maven's right. A prince and princess for a king? Idiotic. We aren't worth him. Our father certainly is. Volos Amos, king of the Rift. Solon stuck a knife in the Lakelander king to please my father and win his favor. It's his fault as much as anyone. It was done in his name. And he is a rival to the Lakelands as much as he is a rival to Cal. It would be easy for Annabelle to bargain him, a logical move to trade my father's life. I keep my fingers tightly knit to hide their shaking. I weigh the options as best I can, my expression empty and devoid of any emotion. If father dies, the rift dissolves. It won't stand without him, not with the way things are. I won't be a princess anymore. I won't be his subject, his hand-raised pet, his toy to trade, his sword to use as he pleases. I won't have to marry anyone I don't love or live my days as a lie. But even against all things, I love my father. I can't help it. I can't bear it. I don't know what to do.
26. Mayor. I refuse to fly in the same drop jet as Maven. So does Cal. Even bewitched as he is, we still can't look at him. Julian, Davidson, and Annabelle fall on that sword for us, escorting Maven in the second jet to give the rest of us some space. Still, we can't speak to each other. The flight back to Harbor Bay passes in stunned silence. Even Evangeline and Ptolemus are shocked and quiet. The trade has thrown everyone off balance. I still can't believe it. Julian and Annabelle back-channeling with the Lakelanders? Under our noses? Without Cal's blessing or Davidson's involvement? It doesn't make sense. Even Farley, with her vast network of spies, never saw this coming. But she's the only one of us who seems pleased. She smiles in her seat, almost vibrating out of her skin with excitement. It shouldn't feel like this. The war is won. No more battle. No more death. Maven lost his crown back on Province. No one even bothered to pick it up, abandoning the circle of cold iron to the island. Iris took his bracelets. He couldn't fight us if he wanted. It's all over. The boy king is no more. He can't hurt me for 1 second longer. So why do I feel so terrible? Dread settles in the pit of my stomach, heavy as a stone and just as difficult to ignore. What happens now? At first I try to blame it on Iris, her mother, and Bracken too. Despite Cal's pledge to honor the Alliance, I doubt they will. They lost too much, and none of them seem like the kind to go home empty-handed. All have personal reasons to seek vengeance, and Norta is still crippled, divided by civil war. Easy pickings for stronger beasts. Whatever peace we find today exists on borrowed time. I can almost hear the tick of the clock against us. That isn't why you're afraid, Mayor Barrow. Last night, Cal and I agreed not to make any choices or change decisions already made. Certain things could be ignored while the war hung in the balance, but I thought we would have more time. I didn't think everything would be finished so quickly. I didn't know our toes were already edging over the precipice. With Maven cast down, Cal is truly the king of Norta. He'll crown himself and take his birthright. He'll marry Evangeline. Nothing before will matter. And we'll be enemies again. Montfort and the Scarlet Guard will not stand for another king ruling Norta. Neither can I. No matter how much he pledges to bring change. The pattern will simply repeat, in his children or his grandchildren, down the line of kings and queens. Cal refuses to see what must be done. He doesn't have the stomach for the sacrifice required to make a better world. I steal a glance at him, looking up through my lashes. Cal doesn't notice me staring, his focus elsewhere and inward, thinking about his brother. the price Maven Kalor must pay for the bloodshed he caused, and the wounds he tore across us all. Before we raided Koros prison, when Cal thought we might find Maven waiting, he said he would lose control. Go after Maven with everything he had. It frightened him to have such a tenuous grip on himself. I told him I would kill Maven if he couldn't. It felt easy to pledge then, but when given the opportunity, when Maven looked up at me from a bathtub, vulnerable as a newborn, I turned away. I want him dead, for what he did to me, for all the pain, all the heartache, for Shade, for the Reds used as pawns in his twisted game. Still, I don't know if I could kill him myself, just to remove the torment of him. And I'm not sure Cal can either. But he will, and he must. It's the only place this road leads. The journey back to Harbor Bay seems shorter than before, and we touch down on the edge of the Aquarian port, the jets crowding what was once a market square at the edge of the water. Soldiers of the Coalition ring the pavement, and my stomach flips. So many eyes. For once, it isn't me being put on parade. Though he did it to me so many times, I take little satisfaction in watching Maven forced down from a dropjet. He stumbles over himself, limbs heavy with Julian's ability, looking more like a boy than ever before. Someone binds his hands in manacles. He says nothing, still unable to speak. Farley looms, close at his shoulder, grinning proudly, one hand raised in triumph. She seizes him by the scruff of his collar.
"Rise, red as the dawn!"
she shouts. With one foot, she kicks the back of Maven's leg as Iris did. He falls to his knees, a king brought low.
"Victory!"
The stunned quiet of the square quickly dissipates as the crowd realizes what this means. And the jeers rise, howling in a storm, until shrieks of joy and venom echo so loudly, I think the entire city must know. Cal's warmth radiates at my side as he watches the display, his face empty of expression. He doesn't enjoy this. "Get him to the palace," he murmurs to Annabelle when she approaches. "As quickly as we can." She eyes him with an annoyed sigh. "The people must see, Cal. Let them enjoy your victory. Let them love you for it." He flinches. "This isn't love," he replies, gesturing at the crowd with his chin. Reds and Newbloods greatly outnumber his own Silvers, but all look on Maven with snarls and raised fists. Fury rules the square. "This is hatred. Get him to the palace and out of the crowd." It's the right choice, and the easy one. I nod at him, touching his arm with a gentle squeeze, offering whatever comfort I can, while I still can. Like the Alliance, we are on borrowed time. Annabelle sharpens. "We could march him—"
"No,"
Cal snaps, voice low and snarling. He glances between his grandmother and me. I tighten under his gaze. "I'm not making his mistakes." "Fine," she spits through gritted teeth. At the edge of the square, transports roll into position, waiting to take us back up to the palace. Cal beelines for the closest one, and I follow, careful to keep a respectful distance. "We still have to send out reports and broadcasts," Annabelle continues as we walk. "Let the people of Norta know their true king has returned. Assemble the high houses, collect oaths of allegiance, punish those who won't swear to your crown, I know," he bites out. Behind us, I hear scuffling and stumbling. Farley pushes Maven along, with Julian flanking them. A few soldiers throw red scarves at her feet, celebrating our triumph. They cheer and shriek in equal measure. The sound is horrible, even from my own people. It brings me back to Archeon, when I was forced to walk the city in chains, a prisoner, a trophy. Maven made me kneel in front of the world. I wanted to vomit then, and I want to vomit now. shouldn't we be better than they were? Even so, I feel the same ugly hunger in me. The desire for revenge and justice, it begs to be fed. I push it away, trying to ignore the monster I carry with me, born of all my wrongs and all the wrongs done to me. Annabelle jabbers until we reach the transports, and Cal dismisses her with a glare. I don't bother to look back before climbing into our own vehicle, unable to watch another person face one fraction of what I suffered in Archeon. Even Maven. Cal closes the door behind him, slumping into the semi-darkness. The divider is raised, separating us from our driver, leaving us alone together, with no need to perform. It's almost silent, the sound of jeering muffled to a low drone. Cal bends forward, elbows braced on his knees, and buries his face in his hands. The emotions of this moment are simply too much to bear. Fear, regret, shame, and so much relief. All undercut by the churning sense of dread, knowing what is to come. I press back against the seat, putting my palms to my eyes. It's over, I hear myself say, tasting the lie. He breathes hard against his hands, as if he's just returned from a training session. It isn't over, he says. Not by a long shot. My rooms in Ocean Hill are on the other side of the residence floors from Cal's rooms, separate from his at my own request. They're finely appointed, bright and airy, but the bathroom is far too small, and currently much too crowded. I shudder against the warm water, letting the soapy bubbles drift around my body. The temperature is soothing, working out the aches and tension in my muscles. Farley leans up against the tub, her back to me, while Davidson does the same at the door, looking shockingly informal for a national leader. His fine suit from the meeting is unbuttoned, open to show a white undershirt and a bobbing throat. He rubs his eyes and yawns, already exhausted, though the morning is barely over. I scrub a hand over my face again, wishing I could wipe away my frustration as easily as sweat and grime. Impossible to get even 1 second to myself. And when he refuses, I grumble to them both. Our plan, one last chance to keep things together, has too many holes to count. Davidson knits his fingers on a bent knee. If he refuses, he will, Farley and I say in bleak unison. Then we do as we say, the Premier says plainly, his shoulders rising and falling in an easy shrug. His angled eyes watch me with weary attention. We're finished if we don't hold to our word, and I have promises to keep to my own country. Farley nods in agreement. She turns to me over her shoulder, her face inches away from mine. Up close, I can count the freckles across her nose, spreading as the summer wears on. They contrast with her scarred mouth. So do I, she says. The other command generals have made themselves clear. I'd like to meet them, Davidson mutters idly. She offers a bitter smirk. If this goes as we think it will, they'll be waiting for us when we return. Good, he replies. I spread my fingers across the surface, dragging lines through the milky, perfumed water. How long will we have? I say, asking what we're all dancing around. Before the Lakelands come back. Next to me, Farley turns back around to rest her chin on her bent knee. She clacks her teeth together, nervous. An odd emotion for her. Intelligence in Piedmont and the Lakelands reports movement at their forts and citadels. Armies being assembled. Her voice changes, growing heavy. It won't be long. They'll target the capital, I say flatly. It isn't a question. Probably, Davidson says. He taps his lip, thoughtful. A symbolic victory, at the very least, and at best, if the other cities and regions kneel, a quick conquest of the entire country. Farley tightens at the suggestion. If Cal dies in the attack. She trails off, stopping herself. In spite of the warm bath, my body runs cold with the thought. I look away from her silhouette, to the window instead. Puffy white clouds move lazily across a friendly blue sky, too bright and cheerful for such talk. Whether he knows it or not, Davidson twists the knife that's constantly stuck in my gut, picking up Farley's train of thought. With no Kalor heirs, no king, chaos will reign across the country. He says it like that's some kind of option. I shift quickly in the water and glare at him. I put one hand on the porcelain rim of the tub, running a threatening spark down one finger. He draws back just a little. It will result in more red bloodshed, Mare, he explains. It sounds like an apology. I have no interest in such things. We must win Archeon before they can. Nodding, Farley clenches a fist, resolute. And force Cal to step down, make him see there is no other choice. I don't move, still staring at the premiere. What about the rift? His eyes narrow to slits. Volo Samos will never tolerate a world he cannot rule, but Evangeline. He turns her name over in his mouth. She might be persuaded, or at the very least, bribed. With what? I scoff. I know Evangeline would do anything to stop her marriage to Cal, but betray her family, throw away her crown? I can't imagine it. She'd rather suffer. She's richer than all of us, and too proud. Davidson raises his chin, looking superior, like he knows something we don't. With her own future, he says. With freedom. I wrinkle my nose, unconvinced. I'm not sure what you could ask from her. She's not going to get rid of her own father. The Premier dips his head in agreement. No, but she can destroy an alliance, refuse to marry, cut the rift from Norta, give Cal nowhere else to turn, help force his hand. He can't survive without allies. He isn't wrong, but the secondary plan is too precarious. Letting it depend on Evangeline's shared motive is one thing, but her loyalty to her blood, her family, it seems impossible. She said herself she can't refuse the betrothal, and she can't go against her father's wishes when all is done. Steam rises in the silence, spiraling through the air. On the other side of the door, an exasperated voice sounds. What are the odds any of this actually goes to plan? Killorn calls from my bedroom. I have to laugh. Has it ever? He responds with a long, frustrated groan. The door shutters as his head clunks against it. Killorn and Davidson are good enough to leave me to dress in peace, but Farley stays put, sprawled across the sea-green covers of my bed. At first I want to chase her out, so I can have a bit of time alone, but as the minutes wear on, I'm glad for her presence. If I'm alone, I might lose it entirely and never open the door again. With Farley here, I have no excuse but to get ready as quickly as I can. Hopefully the momentum carries me through the rest of what promises to be an interesting day. She snickers slightly as I force myself into a formal Scarlet Guard uniform, freshly cleaned and tailored, just for me. I've been oathed to the Guard for almost a year, but it's never felt official. The uniform is supposed to be symbolic, to properly divide me from Cal and his silver allies, but I really think Farley just wanted someone else to suffer with her. The bright, blood-red outfit is tight and stiff, buttoned too high up my throat. I fuss with it, trying to loosen the stranglehold a little. Not fun, is it? Farley chuckles. Her own collar is open, folded over for now. I glance at myself in the mirror, noting the way the special-made garment outlines my form. It's boxy on top, with straight-legged pants tucked into boots, giving me a rather rectangular silhouette. This is no ball gown, that's for sure. While the buttons are polished and gleaming, I have no other decoration on my uniform. No badges, no insignia. I run a hand over my chest, the fabric bare. Do I finally get a rank? I ask, glancing over to Farley. As in the People's Gallery, she has her three general squares on her collar. But most of the false medals and ribbons have been abandoned. No use standing on ceremony in front of Cal, who will know better. She lies back, looking at the ceiling. One leg crosses over the other, her foot dangling free. Private has a nice ring to it. I put a hand to my heart, pretending to be insulted. I've been with you a year. Maybe I can pull some strings, she says. Put in a good word. Get you bumped up to corporal. How generous. You report to Killorn. In spite of the nervous fear tearing up my insides, I laugh out loud. Whatever you do, don't tell him that. I can only imagine the hell he would give me. The teasing, the fake orders. I'd never live it down. Farley laughs with me, her short blonde hair splayed around her face in a halo of gold. She isn't exactly sparse with her smiles or laughter, but this is different, not tainted by a smirk or any sharpness, a small burst of real happiness. It's a rarity these days, in all of us. Slowly, she catches herself, the echoes of her laughter dying in her throat. I look away quickly, as if I've seen something I shouldn't. You stayed with him last night. Her voice is certain. She knows, as I'm sure everyone does. Cal and I weren't exactly discreet. I answer bluntly, without shame. Yes. Her smile fades, and she sits up on the bed. In the mirror's reflection, I watch her expression shift. The corners of her mouth turn downward, and her eyes soften, taking on an air of sadness, if not pity, and perhaps a glint of suspicion as well. It doesn't change things, I force out, bristling as I turn around. For either of us. Farley is quick to respond, one hand raised. I know that, she says, as if calming an animal. Her throat bobs and she licks her lip, choosing her words very carefully. I miss Shade. I'd do terrible things to bring him back, to get one more day with him, to let Clara meet her father. My hands ball at my sides, and I look at my feet, feeling my cheeks flush, with shame, because she doesn't trust me, and with anger, deep sorrow, regret, for my brother, lost to all of us. I won't. She pushes up to her feet and closes the distance between us in firm strides. Her hands grip my shoulders, forcing me to look up into her scarred face. I'm saying you're stronger than I am, Mare. She breathes, eyes shining. It takes a long moment for the words to sink in. When it comes to him, not anything else, she adds quickly, breaking the tension. Nothing else, I say, agreeing with a small forced chuckle. Except electrocuting people. Farley just shrugs her broad shoulders. Well, who knows? I haven't tried that yet. The throne room of Ocean Hill looks out over the city, across blue rooftops and white walls, all the way down to the harbor. Grand windows arch over the king's seat, flooding the chamber with the golden light of late afternoon. It gives everything an almost dreamlike quality, as if this moment isn't real. Part of me thinks I might wake up to the darkness of this morning before we set out for Provence, before the war was so easily won and a life so easily traded. Cal didn't say anything about Sol and Iral afterward, but he didn't have to. I know him well enough to understand how much the memory weighs on him. A disgraced lord, but a lord all the same. Drowned and murdered in payment for Cal's brother. It hasn't gone easy for Cal, but looking at King Tiberius VII, no one would be able to tell. He sits on his father's throne, tall against the diamond glass chair, looking like flame itself in his crimson and black. The windows make his silhouette glow, and I wonder if one of his guards is a Haven shadow, manipulating the light to create an image of power and strength. It's certainly working. He seems like a king. Like his father. Like Maven never was. I despise the sight. The shimmering throne, the simple crown on his head. Rose gold, like his grandmother's. Finer than iron. More elegant, less violent. A crown for peace, not war. Farley and I sit side by side, to the left of the throne with Davidson and his Montfort attendants. On the right, at Cal's hand, is Annabelle, her seat closer to the throne than any other. How Samos sits near her, clustered around another king. I wonder how long Volo Samos spent constructing his own throne of steel and pearly metal. The materials weave in intricate braids of silver and white, studded with the occasional flash of black jet. My lips twitch at the thought of the Samos king wasting hours of his day to make a chair. As always, the pageantry of silvers never ceases to amaze. Evangeline seems oddly nervous next to her father. Usually she delights in these things, content to watch and be watched. Instead, she can't sit still, her fingers twitching and one foot tapping slightly beneath the folds of her gown. I wonder what she knows, or suspects. It can't be Davidson's offer. He hasn't extended it yet, not until he's sure we'll need her. Still, her dark gray eyes flash back and forth, searching the hall, and always returning to the tall doors thrown wide at the far end of the chamber, open to the receiving halls of the palace. A crowd idles outside them, silver and red, hoping to catch a glimpse inside. I feel myself coil with fear. Evangeline is not one to scare easily. But I quickly forget all that when Julian enters the hall, his hand on a familiar arm as he guides the royal prisoner toward the throne. Bold murmurs follow, silenced only when the chamber doors swing shut with an echoing thud, separating us from the rest of the palace. Cal isn't the kind to require an audience, and he's smart enough to know we shouldn't have one while he decides his brother's fate. Maven doesn't stumble this time. He holds his head high, even with his wrists bound. I'm reminded of a bird of prey, a falcon or an eagle, surveying us all with sharp eyes and sharper talons. But he isn't a threat, not without his bracelets, not without anyone here to follow his command. The guards flanking him are Larilan, loyal to Cal and Annabelle, not Maven. I see no way out of this, even for him. They stop a few yards from Cal's feet, and Annabelle stands, her body casting a long shadow. She draws her eyes over Maven slowly, as if they are knives skinning him alive.
"Kneel to your king, Maven," she says, her voice echoing around the deathly silent chamber.
He tips his head.
"No, I don't think so."
Suddenly, I'm back in another palace, staring at a different Kalor king. On my knees next to Maven, my hands shackled behind my back as he stands. When he betrayed us all and revealed who his heart truly belonged to. "Maven, help me up."
"No, I don't think so."
Maven Kalor chooses his words carefully, and he does so now. Even when they have no meaning, when he has no power left, he can still cause us pain. On the throne, Cal darkens, one hand curling into a fist. I feel the monster rise up inside me, begging to tear Maven into pieces, obliterate him. I can't deny the desire, but I have to, for my sanity, for my humanity.
"Stand if you wish,"
Cal finally says, some tension in him releasing again. He waves a hand like he doesn't care at all.
"It doesn't change where you're standing, and where I currently sit."
"Currently?" "Yes," Maven replies, careful to emphasize his meaning. His eyes glint, cold as ice, hot as blue flame.
I doubt you'll sit there long. That's not your concern, Cal says. You have committed treason and murder, Maven Kalor. Crimes too numerous to name, so I won't even try. Maven just scoffs, rolling his eyes. Low effort. His older brother knows better than to take the easy bait, and he lets the insult slide off. Instead, he angles his body, turning toward Davidson, as if consulting an advisor, or even a friend. Premier, what would his punishment be in your country? He asks, his face open and inviting. It's a brilliant show of solidarity, all part of the image Cal is trying to build for himself. A king who unites rather than destroys. A silver who looks to reds for counsel, disdaining the divisions of blood. It already has consequences. On his throne, Volo curls his lip, rustling in his robe like an annoyed bird, puffing up his feathers. Maven is quick to notice. You're going to allow that, Volo? He croons. Standing second to a red? His laughter echoes, a sharp sound to cut glass. How far the House of Samos has fallen. Like Cal, Volo has little desire to sink to Maven's taunting. He stills, crossing his chrome-covered arms over his chest. I still have a crown, Maven. Do you? Maven only sneers in response, one corner of his mouth twitching. Execution, Premier Davidson says firmly, leaning forward. He plants his elbows on the arms of his chair as he shifts for a better view of the fallen, false king. We punish treason with execution. Cal's eyelids barely flicker. He turns again, leaning to Volo. Your Majesty, how would you deal with him in the rift? Volo is quick to respond, teeth clicking. Like Evangeline's, his eye teeth are capped in pointed silver. Execution. Cal nods. General Farley. Execution, she replies, raising her chin. On the floor below, Maven doesn't seem bothered by the sentence, or even surprised. He spares little attention for the Premier, or Farley, or Volo, or even me. Whatever snake coils in his brain has eyes for one person. He stares up at his brother, unblinking, his chest rising and falling in tiny puffs of breath. I forgot how similar they are, even as half-brothers, not just in coloring, but in their fire, determined, driven, constructions of their parents. Cal is built from his father's dreams, and Maven from his mother's nightmares. And what will you do, Cal? He asks, his voice so low and quiet I almost can't hear him. Cal doesn't hesitate. Exactly what you tried to do to me. Maven almost laughs again. Instead, he chuffs out a short breath. So, I'll die in the arena? No, the king replies, shaking his head. I don't intend to watch you spend your last moments embarrassing yourself. It isn't a joke. Maven isn't a fighter. He would barely last a minute in the arena. But he doesn't deserve what Cal is offering, a little piece of mercy in otherwise iron judgment. It will be quick. I can give you that. How noble of you, Tiberius! Maven scowls. Then he thinks better of it, his face clearing. He widens his eyes, and I'm reminded of a dog begging for scraps, a puppy who knows exactly what he's doing. Can I make a request? At that, Cal nearly rolls his eyes. He fixes Maven with a look of pure derision. You can try. Bury me with my mother. The request drives a hole through me. I think I hear someone on the other side of the council gasp. Perhaps Annabelle. When I glance at her, she has a hand over her mouth, but her eyes are stoically dry. Cal has gone bone white, both hands clawed to the arms of his throne. His gaze wavers, falling for a moment,
before he forces himself to look back at his brother. I don't know where Alara's body ended up. Last I knew, it was with the guard on Tuck Island, the island we abandoned. An island of corpses. My brother's and hers. That can be arranged, Cal finally murmurs. But Maven isn't finished. He takes a step, not forward but to the side, in my direction. The full force of his gaze almost knocks me out of my seat. And I want to die the way my mother did. He says plainly, as if asking for an extra blanket. Again, I feel too stunned to think. All I can do is keep my jaw locked in place so my mouth won't gape open in shock. Ripped apart by your fury. He pushes on, his eyes horrible, unforgettable, searing into me. The brand on my collarbone seems to burn. And your hatred. Inside me, the monster roars. I'll do it right now. I helped start this. It's only fair I get to end it. Like Cal's, my fingers curl on my chair, nails digging into wood. I try to anchor myself, pull inward, keep the lightning at bay, but I feel as if I could spark a storm in a single heartbeat. I won't give him the satisfaction of his last seduction. That's what this is. One more drop of poison, a last curl of rot, his final corruption of who I was before he got his claws into me. He knows some piece of me, a large piece, wants this, and he knows it will ruin whatever I manage to salvage from his prison and the torture of his love. Kill him, Mayor Barrow. Be done with him for good. He stares up at me, waiting for my decision. So do the others. Even Cal, a king, won't say a word. As before, he's letting me choose which path I want to take. For some reason, I think of John, the seer who told my fate. To rise, and rise alone. I wonder if that fate has already changed, or if this is how I change it. Slowly, I shake my head. I won't be your ending, Maven. And you won't be mine. On the floor, Maven seems to tighten. His eyes flicker back and forth, searching my face from eyes to lips. He stays quiet for a long minute, as if waiting for me to change my mind. I stand firm, teeth clenched to stop myself from wavering. Lightning has no mercy, I said once. But lightning is only one part of me. It doesn't rule me. I rule it. Fine, Maven forces out, angry to be denied. I feel a tiny bloom of triumph, a counterbalance to the monster in me. He turns away, spinning on his heels to face Cal again. Then a bullet, a sword. Cut my head off if you want. I have little interest in what you choose. Cal is steadily losing his grip, the mask of a king sliding as the ordeal wears on him. I half expect him to get up and walk out of the room, but that isn't like him. No surrender, no show of weakness. That has been drilled into his bones since childhood. It will be quick, is all he says again, hesitant. You already said that. Maven snaps like a petulant child. Silver flushes high on his cheeks, twin spots of darkening color. Annabelle clasps her hands. She looks at the brothers, weighing them against each other. The tension between them jumps and crackles like a live wire, and I wonder if Maven is simply trying to goad Cal into killing him outright, since he couldn't do it to me. Guards, we're finished with the traitor, she says, looking imperious, taking the decision out of Cal's hands entirely. In spite of myself, I glance at Maven, and he's already looking at me. Cal can't make choices. He told me that so many times, and I learned the truth of it in many painful ways. Even with Maven removed, Cal is still reluctant, unable to make up his mind. Maven told me Cal would make a poor king because of it. Or at the very least, another king on a leash, reliant on someone else to help him along. I have to agree. The younger Kalor might be a beast, but he isn't a fool. The Larilan guards turn him forcibly, seizing his shoulders to push him out of the chamber. I expect Julian to go with him, but he stays, instead taking a place behind the throne. He folds his hands, thoughtful and silent. Footsteps are the only sound in the room, echoing with such finality as Maven is led away. I wonder if I'll ever see him again, if I'll have the stomach to watch him die. When the massive doors swing shut behind his form, I slump a little in my seat, exhaling a long breath. I want nothing more than to go upstairs and take a nap. I think Cal feels the same. He shifts on his throne, making to stand. I believe that concludes any business we might have, he says, his voice strained with fatigue. The king makes a show of looking back and forth among us, as if consulting a loyal council instead of a room of precarious allies. Maybe he thinks he can make it so if he just acts the part. Good luck. Queen Annabelle is quick but gentle, laying a hand on his arm to stop his movement. He stills under her touch, perturbed. We have to decide on your coronation, she reminds him with a placid smile. Cal seems annoyed by the prospect, or just by his grandmother nannying him. It must be as soon as possible, tomorrow even. No need for a fuss, just something official. Not to be outdone, Volo braces his bearded chin on one hand. The slightest motion and a clear signal for attention. And there's the issue of Newtown to be settled. Not to mention your wedding. He looks between Cal and Evangeline. If not for their well-trained restraint, I think both might squirm or even gag. It will take some weeks to prepare. I latch onto something else instead. Would you mind explaining the issue of Newtown? I ask, adjusting myself to look at Volo fully. He stares back at me, his gray eyes almost black with disgust. At my side, Farley's lips twitch, but she quickly schools her expression into neutral blankness. Annabelle answers before Volo can say anything or bluster at my rudeness. We don't need to discuss that now, she says, hand still on Cal's arm. Cal looks at me, wary of what I might do and what it could trigger in the Samos King. He purses his lips and furrows his brow, as if to warn me off the subject. No chance, Kalor. I think we should, I tell them all. My voice is strong, clear, a cold echo of Marina Titanos, the weapon Silvers gave me. Among other things. Cal raises an eyebrow. Such as... The Premier clears his throat, taking up his piece of our hastily planned and barely rehearsed conversation, but Davidson is a skilled politician and diplomat. Nothing about his words sounds premeditated. He acts well and speaks with great skill. It's clear the Lakelands and Prince Bracken, not to mention his allies in Piedmont, have little intention of leaving Norta alone, he says, directing his speech at all the Silver Royals, especially Cal, who must be won over. She is united again, but your country has been weakened by a bitter war. Two of your largest forts are either destroyed or neutralized. You're still waiting for the rest of your noble families to pledge allegiance, betting on their support. Queen Senra doesn't seem like the kind to let such an opportunity pass by. Cal relaxes a little, shoulders dropping their infinite tension. The Lakelands are an easier subject than red oppression. He glances at me, almost winking, as if this is just a playful game, a way to flirt, instead of three hunters pushing a wolf into a corner. Yes, I agree, he says with a grateful nod. And with our own alliances strong, we can defend Norta from any invaders north or south. Davidson doesn't drop his serene expression. He only tips a finger. About that. I brace myself, toes curling in my shoes.
Heat rises in my chest. I tell myself to expect nothing. I know Cal well enough to predict what he will say. Still, there's the slim chance that he's changed, that I've changed him. Or that he is simply too tired of fighting, sick of the bloodshed, fed up with the evils his kind have made. Cal doesn't follow where the Premier hopes to lead, but Annabelle sees right through him. Her eyes narrow to slits, snake-like. Behind her, Volo looks like he might run us all through with a few well-placed spikes. On the side closest to me, hidden from the rest, Davidson lowers a hand. It glows vaguely blue, ready to shield us from any attack. His face remains unchanged, his voice still, even and firm. Now that your brother is deposed, and you stand to rule as king, I'd like to propose another option. Premier? Cal asks, still unable or unwilling to understand. The naked fury in Volo and Annabelle gives me pause. Like Davidson, I lower a hand and call sparks to my skin. Davidson pushes on, despite the Silver King and Queen scowling openly at him. Years ago, the Free Republic of Montfort was not as it stands today. We were a collection of kingdoms and lordships. Silver ruled, as you are now. Civil war roamed the mountains. Even though I've heard what he's about to say before, I still get a chill. Peace was unheard of. Reds died for silver wars, silver pride, silver power. Sounds familiar, I murmur, my eyes on Cal. I try to weigh his reaction, noting the slight ticks of motion in his face. Lips pressing together, dark brows curving, a tightening of the jaw, the release of breath. It's like trying to read a picture or smell a song, frustrating and impossible. The Premier gains momentum. He enjoys this and excels in the effort. It was only through an uprising, he says, an alliance of Reds, bolstered by the growing ranks of Ardents, as well as Silver sympathetic to our plight, that we were able to reform ourselves into the democratic nation we are today. It took sacrifice. It took many lives. But more than a decade later, we are better for it. And growing better by the day. Satisfied, he leans back, still ignoring the positively murderous looks from Annabelle and Volo. I hope you would endeavor to do the same, Cal. Cal. The use of the name here, while he sits athrone with a crown on his head, has clear meaning. Even Cal seems to get it. He blinks once, twice, gathering himself. Before he can say anything, Farley squares herself to Cal, eager to play her part in this. Her general squares glint, gleaming sharply, reflecting points of light onto Cal's face. We have an opportunity right now that will not come again. Norta is in shambles, begging to be rebuilt, she says. Farley isn't as good a speaker as Davidson, but she isn't an amateur. The Scarlet Guard picked her to be their voice all those months ago, and they picked her for a reason. She has enough fire and enough belief to stir even the coldest hearts. Let us rebuild her together, into something new. Annabelle speaks before her grandson can say anything, almost hissing, she says. Into something like your country, Premier. And let me guess, you'll offer your services in helping make this glorious new nation? She adds, tossing the barb with deadly accuracy, planting the seed of suspicion she needs. I see it land, shadowing Cal's eyes. Will it take root? Perhaps you might even offer to help rule her. A bit of Davidson's restraint flickers. He almost smirks.
I've a country of my own to serve, Your Majesty, while I am allowed to serve.
Volo barks an empty laugh. It's almost worse than Maven's.
You want us to give up our thrones, everything we worked for, throw away our lineage and betray our houses, our fathers and grandfathers?
Annabelle scowls.
And grandmothers,
I think she growls under her breath. Even though I want to jump up, I keep my seat. It isn't wise to escalate this into a more physical display. And what have we worked for, Volo? I say. Volo barely deigns to look at me. It only feeds the anger in me, making it useful. What have we bled for? The right to be ruled again? To be shuttered into slum towns, bound into conscription, returned to the lives we escaped? How is this right? How is that fair? My grip on myself begins to loosen, and I try to hold back, ignoring the telltale tightening in my throat as I speak. Saying all of this out loud to people who have made this world cruel or kept it that way has a strange effect. I feel as if I could cry or explode, and I don't know which way I might tip. I want to take Annabelle by the shoulders or grab Volo by the neck, force them to listen and see what they've done and what they want to continue doing. But if they keep their eyes shut, or if they look and see nothing wrong, what more can I do? The Samos King scoffs at me, disgusted. This world is neither right nor fair, girl. I would think anyone born red would know that. He sniffs. Next to him, Evangeline keeps still, her eyes on the floor, her mouth pursed shut. You're not our equals, no matter how much you try to be. That is nature. Cal finally breaks his silence, his eyes flaring. Volo, quiet, he says sharply. No title, no niceties, but no denial, either. Whatever line he walks is growing thinner by the minute. What exactly are you asking, Premier? He adds. He's going to make us spell it out. It's not just my request, Davidson replies, looking to me. Cal looks at me, too, his bronze stare fully trained on my face. In spite of myself, my gaze runs over him, from his hands to the crown on his forehead, everything he is. I don't hesitate. I've survived too much and too long. After all we've been through, Cal shouldn't be surprised. Step down, I tell him, or we step back. His voice flattens, hollow of emotion, no shock. He saw this coming. You'll end the alliance. Davidson nods once. The Free Republic of Montfort has no interest in creating a kingdom like the one we escaped. Proud, Farley speaks up too. The Scarlet Guard won't stand for it either. I feel a low tremor of heat, a small ripple from Cal's direction. A bad sign. With a sigh, I let go of any hope that he might finally see reason. It draws his attention, if only for a second. I see hurt in him, enough to evoke the same in me. Just a tiny pinprick, dull compared to all the wounds I have from the Kalor brothers. Cal looks back to Davidson, directing his rising anger to someone else. So you'll leave us to the Lakelanders and Piedmont, kingdoms and princes, worse than I will ever be. He says, exasperated, almost stumbling over the words. It's clear he's trying to salvage this and doing all he can to keep us here. Like you said, we're weak right now. Easy prey. Without your armies, red armies, the Premier reminds him coolly. New blood armies. It can't be done, Cal replies, his voice blunt. He puts his hands out, palms up, empty, with nothing to offer. It just can't be done. Not now. In time, maybe. But the High Houses won't kneel if there isn't a king. We'll splinter. Norta won't exist anymore. We don't have time to change our entire form of government while preparing for an inevitable invasion. Farley cuts him off. Make the time. Despite his height, his broad form, the crown, the uniform, all the trappings of a warrior and a king, Cal has never seemed more like a child. He looks between us, glancing from me to his grandmother to Volo. The latter offer no respite, their faces carved into matching scowls. If he bends to us, they will refuse, and the other side of his alliance will be broken. Behind Cal, unseen, Julian lowers his head. He says nothing to anyone and keeps his mouth shut. Volo runs one deadly hand through his silver beard. His eyes flash.
The Silver Lords of Norta will not give up their birthrights.
Fast as lightning, Farley jumps out of her seat. She spits impressively at Volo's feet.
That's what I think of your birthright.
The Samos King is, to my infinite surprise, stunned into silence. He gawks at her, mouth agape. I've never known a Samos to be at a loss for words.
Rats don't change,
Annabelle snarls. She taps one hand against the arm of her chair, the threat clear as day. Not that it affects Farley much. Cal only repeats himself, his voice barely more than a mumble. The hunters have pushed him into a corner.
It can't be done, he says.
Slowly, with finality, Davidson stands from his seat, and I follow suit.
Then we're sorry to leave you like this, he says.
Truly, I consider you a friend. Cal glances between us, eyes running back and forth. I see sadness in him, the same I feel in myself. We share an acceptance, too. This was always the path we chose to walk.
I know that, Cal replies.
His voice shifts, deepening.
And you should know I don't respond well to ultimatums. Friendly or otherwise.
A warning. And not just to us. We step down together, Reds, aligned in our beliefs and our goals. Red uniforms and green, our skin kissed by the same undertones of rose and scarlet. We leave behind the silvers, as cold and unmoving as if they were carved from stones, statues with living eyes and dead hearts. Good luck, I manage to say over my shoulder, stealing one last glance. Cal responds in kind, watching me go.
Good luck.
In Corvium, when he chose the crown, I thought the world had been snatched away, leaving me to fall through an abyss. This isn't the same. My heart has already been broken, and one night did not sew it back together. This wound isn't new. This ache isn't unfamiliar. Cal is the person he told me he was. Nothing and no one will ever change him. I can love him, and perhaps always will, but I can't make him move when he decides to stay still. The same could be said of me. Farley nudges my hand, a sharp reminder as we walk. Our last request is yet to be made. I turn again, angling my face to him. I try to look as I must. Determined, deadly, an inevitable downfall for the Silver King. But still, Mare. Still the girl he loves. The Red who tried to turn his heart.
Will you let Reds leave the slums, at the very least?
Next to me, Farley barks out the rest.
And end conscription.
We expect nothing in return. Perhaps a pantomime of sadness, or another tragic explanation of how impossible such things would be. Maybe even Annabelle chasing us from the room. Instead, Cal speaks without looking at the silvers on his right, deciding without their input. I didn't know he had it in him.
I can promise fair wages.
I almost scoff out loud, but he keeps speaking.
Fair wages, he continues. Volo blanches, looking disgusted. No restrictions on movement. They're free to live and work where they please. Same for the armies. Fair wages, fair enlistment terms. No conscription.
It's my turn to be caught off guard. I have to blink and bow my head. He returns the gesture.
Thank you for that,
I force out. His grandmother slaps the arm of his throne, indignant.
We're about to fight another war,
she sneers, as if anyone needs reminding of the Lakelander danger. I turn back around to hide my smile. Next to me, Farley does the same. We exchange glances, pleasantly surprised by the acquiescence. It means little in the grand scheme. It could be an empty promise, and it probably won't last. But it serves one purpose, at least. Driving a wedge between the Silvers, putting cracks in an already precarious alliance. The only one Cal has left. Behind me, Cal's voice takes on a dangerous edge as he talks his grandmother down.
I am king, those are my orders, he says to her.
Her response is a whisper I cannot hear, muffled by the groaning noise of the doors as they swing open again and then shut. The receiving hall in front of us is as crowded as before, full of rubbernecking nobles and soldiers, eager to glimpse the new king and his patchwork council. We pass through in silence, our faces blank and unreadable. Farley and Davidson mutter to their officers, relaying our decision. It's time for us to leave Harbor Bay and Norta behind. I unbutton my uniform collar, letting the jacket fall open so I can breathe more easily, unfettered by stiff fabric. Killorn is the only person waiting for me, and he is quick to reach my side. He doesn't bother to ask how the meeting went. Our exit, along with our silence, is answer enough. Damn it, he growls as we walk, our pace brisk and determined. I don't have anything to pack. All my clothes are borrowed or easily replaced, even the ones I came to Harbor Bay in. I have nothing in the way of personal belongings, except the piercings in my ear, and the earrings back in Montfort, tucked away in a box. The red stone. The one I couldn't bear to part with. Until now. I wish I had it here, to leave it in his room, on the pillow I slept on. That would be a fitting goodbye, and easier than the one I have to make now. I break off from Farley and Davidson, who are heading for their own rooms at the bottom of the grand staircase. I'll meet you outside in a few minutes, I tell them both. Neither questions my decision or my purpose, letting me go with a wave and a nod. Killorn hesitates on the first step, waiting for an invitation to follow. He'll never get one. You too, I mutter. This won't take long. His green eyes are narrow, hard as chips of emerald. Don't let him ruin you. He's already done what he can to me, Killorn, I say. Maven can't break anything else. The lie soothes him. Enough for him to turn away, satisfied with my safety. But there's always something left to be broken. His door guards step aside, letting me turn the knob of his room. I do it quickly, so I can't lose my nerve or change my mind. His cell is not a cell, but a fine sitting room, tucked away on an upper floor, facing the ocean. No bed, just a few chairs and a long couch. Either he'll die this afternoon, and he has no use for sleeping arrangements, or a bed hasn't been prepared yet. He stands at the window, one hand on the curtains, as if to pull them shut. No use, he mutters, his back to me as I shut the door again. They don't block the light. I thought that's what you wanted, I reply. To stay in the light? I echo words he said to me months ago, when I was his prisoner, chained to a room like this one, doomed to stare out windows and waste. We have an odd symmetry, don't we? He says, gesturing to the room with a lazy smile. I almost laugh at the circumstances. Instead, I sink into one of the armchairs, careful to keep my hands free and my sparks close. I watch him, still at the window. He doesn't move. Or maybe Kalor kings just have similar taste in jail cells. Doubtful, he replies. But fine prisons, it seems, are how we show affection. Small mercies for prisoners we can't help but love. His declarations mean nothing to me anymore. I barely feel a twinge, easy to ignore, deep in my heart. What Cal feels for you and what you feel for me are very different. Maven laughs darkly. I would hope so, he says, running the curtain through his hands again. He glances at my jacket, then at my collarbone, now covered by an undershirt. My brand is hidden away.
When will it be?
He adds, his voice going soft. The execution. I don't know. Another tainted laugh. He starts to pace, hands folded behind his back.
You mean that Grand Council couldn't make a decision? How predictable. But then I suppose I'll die of old age before your lot agrees on something, especially with Samos close by.
Your grandmother, too.
I have no grandmother, he says sharply. You heard her yourself. She's no blood of mine.
The memory sours Maven. He quickens his step, crossing the floor in a few even strides before turning back again. Despite his calm exterior, he seems manic in these moments, dangling by a thinning thread. I try not to look at his eyes as they glint, alight with a fire close enough to burn.
What are you doing here? I have to say, I didn't enjoy taunting you half as much as when you were my prisoner.
I shrug, watching him with ticking eyes. You're not my prisoner.
Cal's yours. He waves a hand. What difference does it make?
A great deal of difference. I feel the frown tug at my face, the familiar sadness welling up inside me. He sees it behind my own mask of indifference.
Oh,
he murmurs, stopping in the center of the room. He peers at me intensely, as if he can stare through my skull and into my brain, the way his mother did. But he doesn't need to read my mind to know what I'm thinking or know what his brother has done.
So a decision has been made.
Just one, I whisper. Maven takes a single step forward. I'm the danger here, not him. And he's careful to stay out of my reach.
Let me guess. You Reds gave him a choice. The same choice you gave him months ago?
Something like that. His lips curl, showing teeth, but not in a smile. No matter what else, he doesn't enjoy seeing me in pain, physical or otherwise.
He didn't surprise you, did he?
No. Good.
I told you just as much.
Cal follows orders.
He'll be following his father's wishes until the day he dies.
Maven looks almost apologetic as he speaks. Regretful, even. Sorry for what his brother became. I'm sure Cal shares the feeling.
He'll never change. Not for you. Not for anyone.
Like Maven, I don't need weapons to hurt. Just words.
That isn't true,
I tell him, looking him in the eye, fully. He tips his head, clucking his tongue like I'm a child to be scolded.
I thought you had learned by now, Mare. Anyone can betray anyone. And he's betrayed you once again.
He takes one more daring step forward, a few feet away now. I can hear the breath hissing through his teeth, like he's trying to taste the air in my lungs.
Can't you admit what he is?
He murmurs. It sounds like begging. The last request of a dead man. I raise my chin, holding his gaze. Flawed. Just like the rest of us.
His snarl reverberates deep in my chest. He's a silver king, a brute, a coward, a stone who will never move and can never change.
That isn't true, I repeat in my head. All these months have proven that, but nothing more so than a few minutes ago. When he chose, even with his grandmother hanging at his shoulder, fair wages, no conscription. Steps that seem small, but are also gigantic. Inches for miles.
But he is changing, I say, my voice steady, drawing this out. I'm taunting him.
Maven pales as I speak, unable to move.
Slower than we need. But I see it. A glimmer of who he could be. He's making himself into someone else.
Finally,
I lower my eyes as the cracks in Maven's mask begin to show. I don't expect you to understand that. He grits his teeth, furious, and a bit confused.
Why?
Because every change in you was not your own. The razor-edged words tumble, cutting as they go. He flinches, blinking quickly.
Thank you for the reminder, he replies. I so needed it.
I draw my last blade, ready to drive it deep into his heart, and perhaps make him feel one piece of what he lost, if only a fleeting sensation. You know Cal hunted for someone who could fix you, I tell him. Maven's mouth flaps open and closed, searching for something cunning or at least clever to say. He only manages a stammering, what? In Montfort, I explain. He had the premier search for a new blood, an ardent, some kind of whisper, powerful enough to undo whatever your mother did. It almost hurts to see the flickers in him, tiny flashes of emotion beyond rage or hunger. They fight to the surface, but whatever Ilara did holds fast. His face goes still, slack as he listens. But no one like that exists. And even if they did, there's no changing what you are. I realized that a long time ago, when I was your prisoner. But your brother, he didn't believe you were truly gone until today, when he looked into your eyes. Slowly, the fallen king sits down in the chair opposite mine. His legs stretch out before him, and he slumps, letting go of his steel spine. Numb, he runs a hand through his hair, fingering the curling black locks. So like Cal's hair, like his father's hair. He stares at the ceiling, wordless, unable to speak. I imagine Maven in quicksand, fighting to climb out, fighting the impossible nature his mother gave him. It's no use. His face turns to stone again, his eyes narrowed and icy, doing all they can to ignore what his heart wants to feel. There's no way to complete a puzzle with missing pieces or put together shattered glass, I mumble, only to myself, repeating what Julian told me weeks ago. Maven sits up, drawing his back straight. One hand circles his wrist, touching the skin where his bracelet used to be. Without it, he's powerless, useless. He doesn't even need Arvin guards.
Senra and Iris are going to drown you all, he hisses. At least I'll be dead before they get their hands on me.
What a consolation. I would not have liked to watch you die. The admission is small and matter of fact. There is no agenda to it, only the ugly, naked truth.
Will you enjoy watching me?
At least I can respond with some truth of my own. Part of me will.
And the rest?
No, I whisper. I won't enjoy it. He smiles.
That's enough for me. A better goodbye than I deserve.
And what do I deserve, Maven?
Better than we ever gave you.
The door bangs open before I can ask what he means. I start to rise, expecting guards to usher me out, now that I'm no longer part of the coalition. Instead, I find Farley and Davidson standing over us. She glares at Maven with more fire than even Cal could muster, and I expect her to skin him alive in front of us.
General Farley?
Maven drawls. He might be trying to goad her into doing the deed before his brother can. She only snarls in reply, like a beast. Davidson is more polite, ushering someone else into the room. I notice that the hall behind him is empty. The door guard's gone.
So sorry to interrupt, the Premier says.
He gestures and his companion, the Montfort new blood, Arezzo, steps into the chamber. I blink at her, confused, but only for a second. She's a teleporter, like Shade, and her hands are reaching.
It's time we all go,
Davidson sighs, looking between us. I jolt as Arezzo grabs my wrist, but I'm not the only one she's taking. Before the room disappears, squeezing to nothing, I see Maven. His white face, paler by the second, his blue eyes wide with rare shock, and Arezzo's hand on his own.
27. Evangeline. The throne room feels empty without the Reds. Colder somehow. Annabelle is stupid if she thinks we can coronate Cal tomorrow. Foolish, eager woman. No king of Norda can be crowned anywhere but the capital, and it will take a few days at least to stabilize Harbor Bay before anyone can leave for Archeon. There's also the High Houses who are loyal to Maven. They'll need to kneel, pledge themselves to Cal, and be present at any coronation, if the country is to pull itself back together. I say none of this, of course. Let them figure it out for themselves. An unstable King Tiberius will hardly have time for marriage. Unfortunately, he has Julie and Jacos, and the singer lord is more adept at politics than he has ever let on. He overrides Annabelle and suggests they wait a week before the coronation. Cal is happy to take his advice in this and other matters, too. Even now, Cal slumps on his throne, looking drained by the battle and the aftermath. Mostly the aftermath. He keeps stealing glances at the door, too, willing Mare to return. But it's been almost an hour. She and her companions are probably long gone by now, fleeing to the distant mountains of Montfort. Her family is there, waiting. She'll be happy to go back to them. I wish I could do the same and escape back to the Rift. Or to Montfort, a voice whispers. Figures flash in my head, the Premier and his husband presiding over our dinner, hands clasped, relaxed and self-assured, allowed to be who they are. I touch a finger to my temple, trying to massage away the low, dull ache in my skull. Everything seems impossible right now. Elaine isn't in the throne room, but she is close by. She suffered the journey with my parents, arriving this afternoon. I'm itching to be free of this council, if only to steal a few hours with her. I don't know how many I have left. "I'll send out the word," Julian says, hands folded as he stands at Cal's side. Without the Reds, the raised dais of the throne room is hilariously lopsided. "The lords and ladies of the High Houses will be summoned to the capital in a week's time, and you'll be waiting, happy to receive them. Afterward, we can crown you as king." He sounds less than thrilled. Cal barely nods. He wants to be done with all this. He doesn't notice Annabelle in her bronze eyes, now fixed on Julian. Both hope to win the ear of a king, seeking to be highest in his favor, like children vying for a parent's attention. I'd bet on Annabelle. She has the stomach for court, and the spine to eliminate anyone who might threaten her grasp on her grandson. I sigh to myself, already exhausted by the thought of a life chained to him. It excited me once, the lure of a queen's power. I like to think Elaine changed me, but I loved her long before, even when I told myself she was just a pawn like Sonya Eral, a silver lady to do my bidding and back my machinations. I think the war has done something to me, put a fear in me I never had before. Not for myself, but for Ptolemus and Elaine, the ones I love most and would kill to protect. Sacrifice everything to keep safe and close. I've tasted a crown now, and I know it doesn't compare. Father does not share the sentiment, nor will he let me abandon my duties. I haven't mentioned my suspicions about the last piece of Annabelle and Julian's deal, not to him. I could be wrong. Maybe Queen Senra and Iris were satisfied with Solon Eral, eager to hand over a king for a single drop of vengeance. You know that isn't true. Neither of them is a fool. They wouldn't pay such a high price for such a small prize. Because the true prize is your father. I glance at him sidelong, noting the set of his shoulders, proud and straight beneath the curves of his chromium armor, polished so well I can see my reflection in it. I look afraid, my eyes wide and darting, ringed with dark makeup to hide the circles beneath my eyes. I fought well yesterday, enough to keep myself and my brother alive while so many of our kin died. Father hasn't said a word about it. Nothing to indicate he's happy that his children, his legacy, survived. Volo Samos is as hard as the steel we came from, all sharp edges. Even his beard is manicured and pruned to mathematic perfection. I have his coloring, his disposition, and his hunger. But now we yearn for different things. He wants power, as much of it as he can consume. I want freedom. I want my own fate. I want the impossible. Now, as for the royal wedding, Annabel begins, but I can't stand it any longer. Excuse me, I snap, not bothering to look at any of them as I go. It feels like a surrender, but no one stops me, not even Father. No one says a word. I'm barely up the grand staircase before my mother cuts across my path. She almost hisses in anger, imitating one of her snakes. How such a small woman can take up an entire hallway, I'll never understand. Hello, Mother. Don't worry, I'm all right, not a scratch on me, I mutter. She waves off the greeting. Like Father, she doesn't seem to care, or mind, that I faced death yesterday. Really, Evangeline, she scolds, planting her jeweled hands on her hips. Today she favors pale green clothing. Her nose twitches slightly, and I can tell I don't have her undivided attention. The rest is in a mouse still watching the council. You can climb the walls of Fort Patriot, but a simple meeting is too much for you. I shudder, trying not to think about the battle. With some effort, I push the memory away. I hardly enjoy wasting my time, I tell her with a sneer. She rolls her eyes as only a mother can. Discussing your own wedding? There's no discussion to it, I scoff. I have no say, so why does it matter if I'm there? Besides, Tali will tell me everything later. All of Father's commands, I add, spitting out the last word like a bad taste. Mother seems to coil, taut and dangerous. You act like this is some kind of punishment. I raise my chin. All over my body, the steel threads of my gown tighten with my anger. Isn't it? She reacts like I've slapped her and insulted her entire bloodline. I don't understand you, she says, throwing up her hands. This is what you want, what you've worked for your entire life. I have to laugh at her blindness. No matter how many eyes my mother sees through, she will never see through mine. My laughter unsettles her, at least. I glance at her brow, tracing her braid blooming with gemstones. Let no one say Laurentia Viper does not play the part of a queen well. All this for that. A crown suits you, Mother, I sigh. Don't change the subject, Eve, she says, exasperated, as she closes the distance between us. With all the warmth she can muster, she puts both hands to my arms as if to pull me into an embrace. I keep still, rooted. Slowly, her fingers run up and down my arms, rubbing my bare skin. The image is almost maternal, far more than I'm used to. It's almost over, darling. No, it is not. Deliberate, I step out of her grasp. The air is warmer than her hands, so cold they could be reptilian. She looks pained by the sudden distance, but holds her own ground. I'm going to have a bath, I tell her. Keep your ears and eyes away from me while I do. Mother purses her lips. She makes no promises. Everything we do is for your own good. I turn to go, my dress swishing in my wake as I walk from her. Keep telling yourself that. By the time I get back to my rooms, I feel like breaking something, smashing a vase or a window or a mirror. Glass, not metal. I want to shatter something I cannot put back together. I resist the urge, mostly because I don't want to clean up the ensuing mess. There are red servants left in Ocean Hill, but few. Only those who wish to continue their profession, at better compensation, will still serve in the palace here, or in any silver employ. I wonder how far the ripples of Cal's decision will travel. How much will change? Red equality will have far-reaching consequences, and not just for the tidiness of my bedroom. I step deeper into my chamber, throwing open the windows as I go. Late afternoon in the bay is a beautiful time, filled with golden light and a fragrant sea breeze. I tried to find some comfort in it, but it just makes me angrier. The high keening of the gulls seems to taunt me. I think about skewering one, just for target practice. Instead, I throw back the soft blankets of the bed and start to crawl in. A nap is better than a bath. I just want this day to end. I freeze when my hand slides over paper amid the silk. The note is short and small, written in tight, looping script. Nothing like Elaine's elegant, ostentatious cursive. I don't recognize the penmanship, but I don't have to. Very few people would leave me secret notes, and even fewer could actually get access to my bed. My heartbeat quickens in my chest, breath catching. We are right to call the Scarlet Guard rats. I think they might actually live in the walls.
I apologize I could not give you this invitation in person, but the circumstances allow little else. Leave Norda, leave the Rift, come to Montfort. Allowances will be made for you and for Lady Elaine. You will be welcome in the mountains, free to be as you wish. Abandon this empty shell of a life. Don't subject yourself to that fate. The choice is in your own hands and no one else's. We ask nothing in return.
I almost crumple Davidson's note at such naked dishonesty. Nothing in return. My simple presence is a gift in itself. Without me, Cal's alliance to the Rift will be in jeopardy. His only remaining ally might waver. It's a way for Davidson and the Scarlet Guard to pull him back into their grasp.
If you agree, order a cup of tea to your room. We'll take care of the rest. D.
The words burn, branding themselves into my mind. I stare at them for what feels like hours, but only a few minutes pass. The choice is in your own hands. Nothing could be further from the truth. Father will chase me to the ends of the earth, no matter who stands in his way. I'm his investment, part of his legacy. What will you do? A familiar voice asks, sweeter than a song. Elaine blooms into existence across the room, silhouetted against a window. Still beautiful, but with none of her glow. The sight makes me ache. I glance at the note in hand. There's nothing I can do, I mutter. If, I can't even say the words aloud, even to her. It will only make things worse, for me and for you. She doesn't move, no matter how much I want her to cross the room. Her eyes remain far away, fixed on the city and the ocean. You really think things aren't already worse for me? Her whisper, fragile and soft, breaks my heart. My father would kill you, Elaine. He would kill you if he thought, if he knew how tempted we are by this, I say, tightening my grip on the note. And what about Tali? I can't leave him alone, the only heir to the throne of a small and precariously positioned kingdom. The letters of the note seem to blur and swirl. I'm crying, I realize, with a sick jolt. Fat tears land on the paper one by one. The ink bleeds, blue and wet. Evangeline, I don't know how much longer I can live like this. The admission is small, matter of fact. Her face crumples and I have to turn away. Slowly I rise from the bed and walk past her. Red hair flashes at the edge of my vision. She doesn't follow me into the bathroom, leaving me to think. Hands shaking, tears endless, I do as I told my mother I would. I draw myself a bath and sink the note in the water, letting the words, the offer, and our future drown. As I lie back into the warmth, I feel sick with myself, with my cowardice, with everything in my rotted life. I dip my head back and submerge myself, letting the bathwater replace any tears still fresh on my cheeks. Underwater, I open my eyes to the strange, rippling world beneath the surface. I exhale slowly, watching the bubbles drift and burst. I decide I can do one thing, and one thing alone, about all of this. I can keep my mouth shut, and let Julian and Annabelle play their games. My hair is still wet at dinner, coiled into a neat spiral at the base of my neck. My face is bare, too. No makeup, no war paint, no use for any of my usual trappings among family, though Mother doesn't seem to realize that. She's dressed for a state dinner, even though it's just the five of us dining in the grand salon of my father's chambers. Mother glitters, as always, poured into a long-sleeved and high-necked gown of black material that glistens purple and green like oil. Her crown is still there, too, woven into her braided hair. Father has no use for a crown of his own right now. He's intimidating no matter what he does or doesn't wear. Like Ptolemus, he is simple in unadorned clothing, our silver and black. Elaine looks serene next to him, her eyes dry and empty. I pick at my food, silent as I have been throughout the last two courses. My parents speak enough for all of us, though Ptolemus edges words in now and then. As before, I still feel sick, my belly roiling with unease. Because of my parents and what they want from me, because of how much I'm hurting Elaine, and because of what I've done as well. I could be dooming my own father with my silence. His kingdom, too. But I just can't say the words aloud. I think Ocean Hills kitchens are taking the brunt of the young king's new proclamations, Mother observes, pushing the food around on her plate. Usually delicious courses have been replaced with bland, simple fare. Plain chicken, lightly seasoned, with greens, boiled potatoes, and some kind of watery sauce. An easy meal for anyone to prepare. Even me. I suppose the red cooks of the palace have taken their leave. Father slices a piece of chicken in two, the motion vicious and cutthroat.
It won't last, is all he says, the words carefully chosen. What makes you think that?
Tolly, the treasured heir, gets the rare privilege of questioning Father without any threat of consequence. That doesn't mean Father will answer. He says nothing, continuing to chew the tasteless meat with a grimace. I respond instead, trying to make my brother see what I do. He'll force Cal, however he can. I gesture at our father. Prove that the country needs red labor somehow. Dear Tolly furrows his brow, thoughtful.
It will still have red labor. Reds need to eat too with
fair wages, and who pays those wages? Mother snaps, looking at Tolly like he's some kind of imbecile. Odd for her. She dotes on him most of the time. More than she does on me. Certainly not us. She goes on and on, spearing her dinner with tight, jerking motions. The twitchy speed of a rabbit, maybe. It isn't right. It isn't natural. I run the meager proclamations over in my head, announced and effective immediately. Fair wages, freedom of movement, equal punishment and protection under silver law, and... What about conscription? I ask aloud. Our mother slaps her hand on the table. Another folly. Conscription is a good incentive. Work or serve. Without the latter, why would anyone choose the former? It's a circular conversation, and I breathe heavily through my nose. Across the table, Elaine shoots me a warning glance. Obviously, I don't care for our lack of servants either, and the new world Cal wants to build will result in great upheaval, mostly for silvers accustomed to our traditional place. It won't last. It can't last. Silvers won't allow it. But they do in Montfort, just like Davidson said. Their country was built from one like ours. I remember something else he said, only to me, back in the mountains. He stood too close, whispered too quickly, but the shock of his words hit home.
You are denied what you want because of what you are. A choice you never made. A piece of yourself you cannot change, and do not want to change.
I've never thought myself akin to Red's in any way. I'm a silver-born lady, a princess made by the accomplishments of a powerful father. I was meant to be a queen. And but for the longing in my heart, the odd changes to my nature I've only begun to understand, I would be one. Davidson was right in Montfort. Like Red's, I am different from what my world demands I be. And I am not worse for it. Under the table, Ptolemus grabs my hand, his touch kind but fleeting. I feel a burst of love for my brother, as well as another burst of shame. One last chance, then. I assume Elaine will come with us to Archeon, I say aloud, looking between my parents. They exchange a pointed glance, one I know well and do not like. Elaine drops her gaze, staring at her hands beneath the table. She'll have to stand with the rest of her house, pledge loyalty with Haven, I explain coolly, my reasoning sound enough. But not for Mother, apparently. She puts down her fork with a clang of metal on porcelain. Princess Elaine is your brother's wife, she says, emphasizing the words. They sound like nails on glass. She speaks like Elaine isn't even here. It sets my teeth on edge. And your brother, as well as our family, has already proven himself loyal to King Tiberius. There's no need for her to make the journey. She will return home to Ridge House. A flush colors the tops of Elaine's cheeks. Still, she bites her tongue, knowing better than to fight this battle herself. I push out an exasperated breath. Long journey. What a load of... Well, as a princess of the Rift, she should be at the coronation, to show the kingdom who we are. The pictures and recordings will go out all over the Rift as well as Norda. Our kingdom should know its future queen, shouldn't they? My argument is shaky at best, and it sounds as desperate as I feel. I hate reminding anyone, most of all myself, of Elaine's title, because it comes from my brother, not from me.
It's not your decision.
Father's glare used to shut me up, stop me cold when I was a child. Sometimes I would run from him, but that landed me worse punishments. So I learned to stare back, in spite of my own fear, to meet what terrifies me head on. She doesn't belong to him or to you, I hear myself growl, sounding like one of my mother's great cats. I don't know how much longer I can live like this, she said before, and neither do I. Her jaw works furiously as she grinds her teeth together, unable to speak. Tali leans forward, as if he can defend me from our parents. Eve, he murmurs, if only to end this before things take an even worse turn. Mother throws back her head and laughs, the noise horrendous and sharp. I feel dismissed, spit upon, diminished by someone who is supposed to love me. Does she belong to you, Evangeline? She croons, still smirking. I want to slap her. The fear in me melts to anger, iron turning to steel. We belong to each other, I reply, forcing down a sip of wine. Elaine's eyes snap to mine. They burn me through. I've never heard anything so ridiculous in my life, Mother scoffs, shoving her plate away. This is inedible. Again, Father glares at me.
It won't last, he says again,
and I think it's an answer to us both. Mirroring my mother's actions, I push away my plate of untouched food. We'll see, I mutter to myself. I've had enough of this. All of this. Before I can leave the table, storm away for a second time, Annabelle Larrilan enters the room, her guards on her heels. Even she isn't presumptuous enough to face down a Samos brood without protection.
My apologies, she says quickly, nodding her head. Her own crown gleams, reflecting the fading light with a warm flash. For the interruption. When confronted with Queen Annabelle, Mother quickly takes on the mantle of Queen Laurentia. She improves her already flawless posture, drawing up her spine and dropping her shoulders. With an imperious gaze, she turns to look at Cal's grandmother. I assume you have a reason? The Laralan queen nods. Maven Kalor is gone. Next to me, Ptolemus exhales. He almost smiles. So do my parents, both of them glad to finally be rid of Maven. I only wish I could have seen it done, to know it is finally over for the monstrous boy who plagued us all for so long. My brother speaks first, shifting to look at Annabelle head-on.
Did Cal do it himself?
Her expression turns stony. I mean, he isn't here. I feel a slight pressure, the slow squeeze of my bracelets tightening at my wrists. On the table, the silverware starts to tremble. Not with my own anger or Ptolemus's, but with our father's. Volo curls one fist on the table, and the knives and forks curl with it. Father narrows his eyes.
He escaped?
Improbable, but not impossible. Many Silvers are still loyal, some of House Haven. They could sneak into the palace easily, stow him away, pull him out. My mind spins through the possibilities. Haven interference would be the worst, because it could blow back on Elaine. Annabelle shakes her head, her scowl deepening with every passing second.
It doesn't seem to be so, she hisses.
Mother sucks in a sharp breath. Then, I finish the thought for her. He was taken. The old queen curls her lip.
Yes.
By the Reds, I murmur. For a quivering moment, I think Annabelle might explode. She bares her teeth.
Yes.
The sun has fully set by the time we reach Cal's quarters. Crowding into the large salon where he met us all yesterday, he paces furiously, still dressed in his court regalia, including the rose-gold crown. He stalks around his uncle Julian, seated primly in one of the seats with his legs crossed and arms folded. A woman leans up behind him, pale hands planted on Julian's narrow shoulders. Sarah Skonos, the skin healer. She says nothing, letting the pair talk as she weighs their words.
The intent is quite obvious, Julian stops himself as we troop in. Two council meetings in one day, what a treat, he says dryly. Quinn Laurentia, interesting to see you. Instead of glaring at the singer lord, Mother dons the falsest smile she can muster.